It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. And, oh, I love this panel. Doc Rock is here from Ecamm Live and, of course, YouTube.com/DocRock. Denise Howell, former host of This Week in Law, is also here. She's got a big announcement. If you were a fan of the show, you'll want to hear that. And Brian McCullough from the Tech Meme Ride Home. We're going to talk about privacy, the FTC, eSports. Is Excel an eSport? I think it is. TikTok and the fall of social media. Plus, Elon Musk, why is he selling all of that stock in Tesla? It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT. This Week in Tech, episode 888, recorded Sunday, August 14th, 2022, Frolic and Detour. This Week in Tech is brought to you this week by IT Pro TV. Give your team an engaging IT development platform to level up their skills. Volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/twit and make sure to mention TWIT30 to your IT Pro TV account executive to get 30% off or more on a business plan. And by Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is they're the first company to sell wireless service online only. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/twit. And by Worldwide Technology and HPE. With an innovative culture, thousands of IT engineers and application developers, unmatched labs, and integration centers for testing and deploying technology at scale, WWT helps customers bridge the gap between strategy and execution. To learn more about WWT, visit wwt.com/twit. And by ClickUp, the productivity platform that'll save you one day a week on work. Guaranteed. Use the code TWIT to get 15% off ClickUp's massive unlimited plan for a year, meaning you can start reclaiming your time for under $5 a month. Sign up today at ClickUp.com. But hurry, this offer ends soon. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. We have assembled an esteemed, distinguished panel of technology experts to facilitate this conversation this week, starting with Denise Howell, former host of This Week in Law, denisehowell.info. She is a practicing professional attorney. Hello, Denise.
Hello, Leo. Great to be here.
Always a pleasure. It's great to have you on here. And I'm glad you have a candle, which you can light for us a little later if we need to. I think it's dark.
Yes.
You will be our candle in the dark.
They've had my power out twice in the last 2 weeks, so you're not far off.
You really realize how much we depend on power when you lose it, like everything. Oh.
And they went ahead and broke the fiber optic that was providing nice internet to the house at the same time. Nice.
That's awesome. Also with us from the great state of Hawaii, where it is still yesterday, Doc Rock.
It just threw me off. Oh my goodness. Aloha, Leo.
Aloha. YouTube.com/DocRock. He's also an Ecamm ambassador, and he is, according to the sign behind his head, on the air. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much.
I like the purpleness of the grotto with Doc Rock.
You know, I started this as an homage for Alzheimer's awareness.
That's the color for Alzheimer's awareness.
Karen's dad has it, and my mom. They got it about at the same time. I've just been on a mission. Can we do something about this thing?
Good.
You know,
I'm with you.
So that started it, and I like it.
I'm getting to the age where if I start forgetting your name, then you'll know I'm next. So let's.
Bro, I'm feeling it. Every time I walk in a room and like, why am I in here? I'm like, oh God, me too.
You know why that is, by the way. You go through a door, it's a context shift.
Yes.
Right? Denise, back me up on this. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. And for some reason.
The door in Severance, and I just go in the elevator and.
It's like the elevator in Severance. No, for some reason, when you shift a context like that, your brain is designed to, like, scram to dump the old RAM and start fresh. So everything you thought about before you went through that door, gone. It's not made up.
I knew this onboard memory thing was a thing. I got to talk to Tim about that.
It's not made up, right? Denise Howell backs me up. Also here for the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast, internet historian Brian McCullough. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Leo. I've got something that you should buy. It wasn't Prime Day, but see if you can recognize who this is. Hold on.
That head with the red nose?
Well, it's got a Band-Aid on because my dog bit the nose off. See if you can
Who is that?
Mark Zuckerberg.
Zuckerberg.
Now, here's what I'm using
No wonder
it
your
for.
Dog bit his nose.
Well, this is legitimately what he's been used for. You ready?
Yeah. He's got a Mark Zuckerberg head.
Where do you put your headphones when you're done with the show, right? You just throw them on a desk?
Yeah. Where'd you get that and how much?
It's on Etsy. It was $50. It's a 3D printed Zuckerberg head. And since he loves all things Roman emperors and stuff, I figure that the nose kind of works.
It does. Like you should just chop it right off. Yeah. That is great.
Wow. So,
I think you should get that. I think you should get that for the studio because remember, was it Conan who always used to have the pencil cup that was Eisenhower or something?
Now, like, by the way, there are other, I don't have to copy you. I could get Arnold. They have an Arnold head for holding your headphones. Get your ass to Mars. Yeah, that's good.
Actually represented Arnold in a case where he was suing about an auto dealership misusing his likeness. And this is a similar kind of situation.
Counselor, please do not contact angled designers. Here's Jack Nicholson as the Joker.
Oh, that is brilliant.
Sure, buddy. Put those headphones on me. I think this is a real discovery here. Angled designers on Etsy. They have a Homelander, Steve Carell, Godzilla.
Ooh, Mark Hamill.
You want Mark Hamill?
Well, my whole office is Star Wars everything.
Wouldn't it be funny if the headphones were on? I think you need to get this. Why is Arnold $4 more?
Yeah, I was wondering about the price differences.
For some reason. And
it's a gubernatorial feast.
Maybe because he's so big, it uses more PLA fiber.
It's very expensive to print the muscles.
That's just, I can't decide. That's really what's... But here's
creepy. It's very realistic.
It is. It's good to know that 3,656 people in the world have Arnold Schwarzenegger's head on a shelf. All right. Well, we've started the show in a unique fashion. Thanks to you, Brian. I love that. It was only a matter of time before I asked, is that Mark Zuckerberg's head on your shelf? So it's a good thing.
He'll be watching over us the whole episode.
I'm a little mad at Mark, and I don't know. Maybe this is, it's not reasonable to be mad at Mark for this. It's just something leaves a bad taste in my mouth. A teenager and her mom in Nebraska, 17-year-old girl, and her mom were chatting on Facebook Messenger, they thought privately, about her medicine-induced abortion. The abortion was at 28 weeks, which is illegal in Nebraska. Nebraska somehow must have found out about it. The police sent a subpoena, a warrant to, I don't know what the difference is, one of those, to, I think, a warrant to Facebook, and they provided the not-so-private chats, which were then used to gather more evidence and arrest the 17-year-old who's being tried as an adult. Her mother is also being tried, as is a man who is charged with attempting to conceal the death of another person, the fetus. This to me is exactly, in a nutshell, why privacy is so important. You can't, Denise, can you fault Facebook? Don't they have to give the police that information, given a valid warrant?
They do. Here's what they don't have to do. They don't have to have the data. They could delete it. They don't have to keep chat logs.
Good point.
Yeah. So if you want to get mad at Mark for something, get mad about him for that. Because they have to respond to search warrants with information they actually have. Yeah. If they don't have it, they don't have anything to give over.
This is why encryption, end-to-end encryption is so important, because then the company can't hand it over. And in fact, weirdly, right about the same time, Meta expanded Messenger's end-to-end encryption. They say it is unrelated to the Nebraska abortion case. You can have end-to-end encrypted conversations, as I remember, on Messenger, but you have to turn it on. So, and you remember that famous post from Mark Zuckerberg 3 years ago saying, you know, everything's going to be end-to-end encrypted eventually. They have faced, according to Wired, technical and political challenges that have delayed that. But they're driving, according to Wired again, they're driving toward, quote, a global rollout of default end-to-end encryption for personal messages and calls next year. Government doesn't like this. Government calls it going dark. They think the bad guys are going to use this.
Government likes search warrants.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, we know that. So, you know, this is painful on a number of levels. I feel for the 17-year-old who didn't want to have a baby. She and her mom had conversations she thought was private. Mark thought otherwise. But at every step of the way, this is all legal.
Yeah, for sure. And a good cautionary tale in the wake of recent Supreme Court developments to know that this is how things are going to go. This case would have been prosecuted before Dobbs because
it was late.
She was
late
so,
term
yeah,
abortion.
It was late.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, this is how this is going to go. People are going to be asked for search histories. People are going to be asked for communications.
And we know that the data smog that you leave behind you can be used in all sorts of ways. I remember a story from years ago. Was it Target? Some store knew that a shopper was pregnant before her family did based on her purchases at the store, so they started sending her solicitations for, you know, diapers and things, and she was like upset because she hadn't told anybody she was pregnant. And this is the case. Your data can say things, and if suddenly you're not pregnant after being pregnant, this data can get you in a lot of trouble in about 23 states in the United States. So what should we do? I mean, we talked about period tracking apps. Turn those off. Yes.
But definitely. And, you know, I think it's just a good idea. I know it's a lot to think about people using Signal in their daily lives, but, you
that's
know,
a shame.
If you're
you, then, yeah. 'Cause then you're acting as if, you know, I'm a secret agent and I have to do everything encrypted. Plus, you have to get everybody to do it. And I even think that that could be a red flag for law enforcement. Well, that's interesting. Leo seems to be using encrypted messaging exclusively. I wonder what he's up to.
Yeah, but you use HTTPS too in your browsers, you know? I mean,
that's why Facebook and everybody else should just turn it on. Then nobody looks guilty because they're using it. It's just the default. Everybody's using it. You don't have to choose Signal.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's hope they move along.
The other reason that they want to do that is because exactly what we're talking about, then the next time something like this happens, they're kind of off the hook because there's nothing they can do. The problem would be, right, to play devil's advocate, is the next time there's a terrorist attack or something that everyone can see was planned on Telegram or something like that, and there's no way to track people down, then the government gets even more mad and wants to.
The only thing I would say to that is there have always been and probably always will be a way for people to communicate privately, even if it involves going out in a field and whispering in each other's ear. People are going to be able to communicate privately. You cannot eliminate all means of communicating privately. And the law protects to some degree your privacy and things like, actually, it's a good one for our attorney. Is there any, I mean, you can get a wire, law can always get a wiretap, right? Is there, they can open mail, right? There are laws against opening mail, but if they have a warrant, they can open mail.
Particularly under the Patriot Act and all the legislation that came out after 9/11. Yeah, you can, if there is probable cause for a crime that's being investigated and they think that data may exist in a place, they can compel it to be turned over under a court order.
So
it's so we get back to, do you have the data?
Right. I'll make the argument that Phil Zimmerman made when I interviewed him. He was the creator of PGP. And he said law enforcement is not going dark. Law enforcement has unprecedented access to data, more than they've ever had before. People are using digital devices to communicate, and law enforcement can see into most of those. So it isn't the fact that, oh, my God, we can't do our job anymore. It's he said, and I think he's accurate, it's more of a case they've got an amazing view into everything that's going on, and there are a few little spots where they can't see, and that bugs them that there's some dead pixels. They're not going dark. They have more than they've ever had before. Does that seem accurate, Doc?
100%. Yeah. That's exactly what I think, that it is the full, they want full control, and they also want full autonomy. And it's funny how it works until it gets flipped back on them because of something that they did wrong.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Then it's like, oh, the camera was off. Or this is secret. And if we tell you how we did it, then, you know. So that's the catch 22. And you're right. They definitely have more access. They have the best tools in the world. Now, if you look on LinkedIn and you are a forensic data specialist, you will find jobs in law enforcement agencies all around the country looking to hire people that are even better at it. So, yeah, they're kind of full of it. They want the best of both worlds. They also, just like in an interrogation, they know all they need to know, but they want you to tell them, because then that ironclads the case, which is the reason why they end up screwing it up, because they keep pushing for a confession and then they do something dumb and get the person off. Because they just want to get their work done for them.
This is a little off topic. And by the way, we have a lot of law enforcement people listen to our shows. I've met them. I've talked to them. And I have a huge respect for them. I know
my brother-in-law is a cop. So, yeah. I mean, it's definitely not an anti-law enforcement thing. I think it's more of, like you said, if I can get everybody to do all of the work for me, that just makes my job easier. I don't blame anybody for wanting that, but you just got to understand what you're asking for.
Yeah, and look, the Constitution has two amendments, the Fourth and the Fifth, designed really to protect our privacy and to protect us against unlawful search and seizure and overreaching law enforcement. So this is something that's been recognized for 200 plus years in this country, and we are in theory protected. I don't want to go down this. There's a wonderful book Jeff Jarvis recommended, Eli Mistal, who is a commentator on MSNBC. He's a Harvard law graduate, a brilliant guy, wrote a book, Allow Me to Retort, The Black Man's Guide to the Constitution. And in it, he makes, I think, a strong case that, look, we got the Fifth Amendment. You're right to, you know, not incriminate yourself. You know, people plead the Fifth. And yet we allow, you know, in coerced confessions all the time. And really, he says, you should not allow confessions in the trial. That just shouldn't be allowed. The Fifth specifically says you have a right not to incriminate yourself. And I mean, that's a longer conversation. And I'm sure, Denise, you've probably thought about this a little bit. I think Ali makes a very good case for it. He's against confessions. He says, forget the, you know, Miranda rights. Police should not be allowed to ask for confessions. You shouldn't.
I don't know. I mean, if you're sitting there being interviewed and your lawyer's there and you have a good lawyer and you decide to confess, I'm okay with that confession being used.
It's so often misused.
Yeah.
You're right. Under perfect circumstances, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
You should be allowed to plead guilty, right? I did it. Your Honor, I did it. Anything more than that, though, gets you in a lot of trouble, because there's a lot of coerced confessions going on.
Yeah.
They lie to you. They'll, you know, there's all sorts of things. So as any lawyer and any police officer will tell you, don't talk to the police ever. Just don't talk. It's not in your interest. They're not looking to help you. They're looking to convict you. Speaking of privacy, Lina Khan, we've been waiting for the other shoe to drop. She is the new chairman of the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, and they have now kicked off their massive push to regulate the data economy. They've asked for a request for comments They launched a notice on Thursday this week of potential rulemaking, and they're looking for comments on a long list of questions having to do with privacy and data protection. Chairman Khan said in a statement, the growing digitization of our economy, it's what we've just been talking about, right? Coupled with business models that can incentivize endless hoovering up of sensitive user data and a vast expansion of how that data is used means that potentially unlawful practices may be prevalent. They're trying to decide whether they should regulate in these areas. It's a 44-page notice with literally dozens of questions about digital ads, security of consumer information, biometrics, psychological harms, corporate structure, the protection of kids and teens, algorithmic discrimination.
I haven't looked at all 44 questions, but I hope they have something in there about the perceived privacy of digital communications tools.
Yeah. Well, that's right what we were talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
If it's the FTC, then wouldn't this be more about like the commercial surveillance stuff than government surveillance stuff? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although we were right before the show was starting, we were talking about Amazon Prime Day and whether Leo was going to get a rice cooker at the appropriate price. And the thing I was thinking about at that time is there are these tools out there. I'll use the word tools to be generous and kind about what they are. They are apps that run that help you price compare things. So if you want a particular rice cooker, you can plug it in.
They will scour the web.
Yeah. And they will tell you when it's hit that price threshold that you've set or when it's gone on sale or however. They all work differently. But, you know, I haven't delved too deeply into the data that these things are gathering and how they're using it. But everyone is voluntarily forking over a lot of data here. Not so much critical data about, you know, am I going to have an illegal abortion or do something else illegal? But still, I don't think the people using these apps are thinking about the privacy ramifications of them.
By the way, I have this conversation with Lisa because she uses Honey. Mm-hmm. And every time I say, oh, don't use Honey, she shows me the check that she gets in the mail from Honey, from Rakuten. She says, no.
Rakuten.
Yeah. But this is the difference. She's getting recompensed for the privacy violation. She knows she's giving them this information and she's getting a check in the mail. It's not exactly an explicit trade, but she understands, and I think most people understand, yeah, that's why they're sending me money. That's why I'm getting coupons. They're doing something with the information I give them, and I'm willing to do that for the check.
Oh, I'm happy to have the FTC look into things like that and decide that everyone is on the same page about them.
Maybe just it would be simple enough to say more disclosure. Like, okay, you be very clear what you're going to do with this data and who's going to get it. Don't just put it in some privacy statement, you know, in the fine print. Tell people right up front, hey, we're going to send you $17.53 every 4 weeks. In return, you're going to send us every bit of information about everything you do on the internet. Because Honey is a plugin that sits in your browser, and I guarantee you sees every site you're going to, right? It's not just about the shopping. Yeah.
Right.
This is also the important point, too, though, is to set up guardrail. Everything we've talked about is what exists right now. But if we can set up guardrails, then when everybody is in connected cars and self-driving cars and your car, you know, I think, who is it? IEEE Spectrum has been doing a series all this week about the data that Tesla already collects.
Oh, man, do they collect data. Yeah.
And so, you know, what the idea is this isn't fixing stuff after the horses have already left the barn. This is, okay, learning from not setting guardrails 20 years ago and setting guardrails to fix what already exists, but also to before a company can even form to exploit a certain thing, be like, well, you can't do that because it's against the rules.
Yeah.
Getting in front of it.
We worship capitalism. And this isn't this exactly what capitalism is all about, is using these technologies to be more successful as a company. I mean, that's
100%. There were people out there who bought the people's PC and were happy to have it. Do you remember that thing?
Oh, yeah.
And I am all for their ability to buy the people PC or whatever its modern day equivalent is and be, you know, the data canary in a coal mine, I guess, giving over your activities and being subjected to ads. There has to be a real decision to do that. There has to be Lisa deciding, yeah, I want my check.
People PC online, unlimited data access. This was from Earthlink. Unlimited internet access for free. Or, okay, $5 a month. Five times faster with a free accelerator.
This comes up every time I have a conversation with someone and trying to explain to them that, no, you're, let's call her Angela. Angela and Serena are not listening to you. They're like, no, but they are, because every time I do this, and then something, I'm like, have you ever had like a Olympus or Roland, the little recorder, like from college, we used to try to take notes?
Yeah.
Imagine doing that for, I don't know, 8 billion people and processing
you
that.
You can't listen to all of that.
You know, speech to text. And I'm like, no, you're giving this info up every single day. And my friend's like, no. I'm like, do you have Honey or Rakuten installed in your browser? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, you're giving all the answers everywhere you search just for those two things. So, and I use Rakuten because I like to check too. But I also have Ghostery to block the stuff that I know that's bad.
You're just a free rider on Rakuten. That's what you are, my friend.
Don't tell anybody. and I wish they would stop. You know, this is my only pet peeve with Rakuten. It's Rakuten.
Rakuten.
It started out as a, but they in the U.S.
Rakuten.
Completely changed it to Rakuten because they like, it'll be easier for Americans to understand. So we're not dumb if you give us the right answer.
Yeah, that may be what they say, but what they really want is it's not foreign. We don't want Americans to think it's foreign.
You know, I didn't think about that. That's why they adjusted.
It's American.
It makes sense.
It's American.
It completely makes sense.
By the way, okay, so I was looking at a rice cooker. Busted. What are the chances that Amazon is now recommending rice cookers to me? Should we check?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah, check.
Oh, look. Rice cookers galore.
Look, they even showed you some aomugi over there, which is actually good stuff. It's the green.
We buy a lot of this stuff. This is the matcha green tea with roasted brown rice.
Well, and the guide to competitive programming was up there at the top too.
Well, that was something I was looking at. How did you picked right up on that, did you? Yeah.
The funny thing is, are they going to assume you're Japanese and start pitching you a bunch of stereotypically Japanese products at this point?
I think one reason
I get it all the time, and I think it's because when you check my browser, it has, or if they can all the way, and I haven't even bothered to check, if they can see all the way down to the OS, I have Japanese installed because I write in Japanese often. Stop doing that with your hands, Doc. You're right, because I definitely get recommended things that I'm like, they don't send this to anybody else, but I definitely get like, you know, miso products and things like that.
They know.
Presented to
them. Although I think that really these recommendation engines are so crappy is part of the reason people don't like the ad tracking. If they were good, it wouldn't be so bad. But they're recommending stuff you just bought. They're recommending things you would never want. They're so bad. So here's what Explore More Items. This is just a random collection of weird stuff.
You have the same, because I bought a Jackery like 3 months ago. And so you have the exact same stuff on, like, because I got those solar panels all the time. I have every battery thing you can.
I've never ever purchased solar panels.
But that's the point, is that, so I spent $1,500 on a whole unit, like, you know, solar panels, this battery thing or whatever. I don't need another one necessarily.
Yeah, you just
But they have
it.
Not stopped. Yeah, yeah.
You need it as badly as I need the Trompo King Stainless Vertical Skewer Barbecue Grill. Stand great for tacos, al pastor, shawarma, Brazilian churrasco, whole chicken kebabs, and many other delicious dishes that require skewers.
Hey, I'm coming over if you buy that thing. With the rice?
I don't think I'll be making shawarma anytime soon.
This is the part that's creepy that freaks people out. People don't understand this, and it's changed a little bit because we haven't been as mobile as before. But if you frequent the same 4 or 5 people all the time, because you guys just hang out, bridge night, poker, whatever, and one of the people in your group starts searching for stuff, the recommendation engines would assume that all of you guys might, because I had buddies looking at Disneyland trips and I would get the Disney ads on my YouTube stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the funny one, they'll send me Disney Owlina ads. And I'm like, bro, I live here. I can just drive. You don't have to see. You don't got to see me. I want to see Stitch. I'll walk over there.
It's really.
Because other people look, it sends it to you.
It's just really how pathetic the whole recommendation thing is. It just doesn't work well. And so, you know, I think a lot of times, and there's another story related to this, but a lot of times, tech companies blame us for, you're doing ad blockers or using Ghostery, or, you know, they blame us for their crappy technology. The recommendation engines, even if you use Rakuten and Honey and you give them all the information, they still get it. I just bought a rice cooker. They want to sell me more. Like, how many rice cookers does one family need? And just so you know, the Guide to Competitive Programming, Brian.
Yes.
There is such a thing as competitive programming. Perhaps you're not familiar with it, but it's a lot of fun. Competitions for how fast you can solve programming problems. And
are you aware
yes.
that the Excel Championships
yes.
were on ESPN?
ESPN 2. El Ocho, they were on. The Ocho.
You know, Leo, you just showed me something funny. Because, of course, in my live stream process, people ask me gear recommendations. So I'm always going to Amazon to show them which one. I wish they had a way to close that picked up where you left off and keep shopping for. Because recently I was doing the stream, and I'm about to go on this 42-day road trip. So naturally that required buying some Skibbies.
And when I went to go underwear share the screen, everywhere.
It's like, yo, champion, like 6XL draws, you fat guy. thanks for putting me on blast, Alexa.
I'm telling you, that's why people hate this stuff. If they were better at it, I think people wouldn't mind so much. But they're not good at it. I do every year at the end of the year in December, there's something called the Advent of Code. It's an Advent of calendar of coding problems. And I do it every year, and I always get stuck before the end. And so I'm hoping if I read a few books, I'll be ready for competitive programming. That's what.
And we'll see you on El Ocho.
El Ocho. ESPN introduces the World Excel Championships. It's actually the Financial Modeling World Cup. Let's be very specific here. And I'm told it was quite good. I don't know. Did you watch it?
No, but it was always amusing to me that, Monty Python with their jokes about chartered accountants and stuff.
Yes.
The idea that you could have exciting accounting esports is, a brave new world.
And I believe that's the channel where I first saw competitive professional cornhole.
Oh yeah, I saw that too, and I thought, why? Why it's boring? But you know what? Then the guy made an amazing shot, and I thought, oh, I'm watching this some more. this is good.
Someone just invented a cornhole where the hole moves around.
Oh no!
I just saw that recently.
Don't do that.
The hole was moving, and so that way, when you go to throw it, you can't just get good at your little arc or whatever.
These are the champions in the Excel Esports All-Star Battle. They kind of look like it, don't they?
Not all of them. I mean, some of them look pretty,
She looks normal.
Like you could go have a beer.
He's got
a
beer. How big is this guy's forehead? Look at this forehead. My God.
God. That is an 8-head.
What do you think the trash talk is if you're doing competitive Excel?
Dude.
It's probably not like boxers squaring off ahead of a
match. That's not a pivot table. That's typing. actually, this has been a big thing in the Open. If you're good at this, the Open is coming up in October. That means it's open to all. You don't have to be, a qualified competitor. And there's a big $10,000 prize fund. They're going to live stream it. The ESPN took the live stream, edited it down to 30 minutes out of, 5 hours, and had a highlight.
I never thought I'd be on ESPN, Jason Moore.
How about, let's see, which one would you like? It's a snake. Can you write the snake game in Excel?
Oh, cool.
Connect Four. What's Lumberjack? No specific financial knowledge is required. Well, that's a relief. You have 30 minutes. You'll get an Excel file that includes the case as well as a separate sheet with correct answers. Take note, there are many approaches to solving the case. So it has something to do with tree harvesting. I think this is great. This is competitive programming.
It is great. I live down the street from UC Irvine, which has one of the most, I think, expansive esports undergraduate and possibly graduate programs.
Wow.
Of any university. And they have a whole esports arena. They have, it's, look it up.
You have, okay, now your son's going off to college in September.
Right. Right.
I think that they do this because kids in high school say, oh, I want to go to that school because I could study esports. And their parents are going, over my dead body, you're going to study esports. Would you son become an esports legend?
So one of my good friends, one of my son's good friends, it was sort of going down that path. I don't know that esports will be his life, but his parents did support him. And, you know, I mean, there's money to be made there, guys.
Oh,
it's
what am I saying?
Just a joke. Yeah.
My 27-year-old son is a TikTok chef, and I have supported him in building his career as a TikTok chef. So you're right. What am I saying? Although if he had come to me on his way to college saying, Dad, I'm going to school to study TikTok, I might have had some qualms about all this.
Super funny.
He's got, I hate to say it, but he's got more followers than Twit does. So I can't complain. He's doing all right, I guess. Although he keeps asking me for money. Is that normal?
you'll flip that in a couple of years.
It's exactly what I'm saying. I'm keeping track. You know, in a couple of years, I may be calling you. Let's take a little break. I love this panel. It's great to have you, Brian McCullough, the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast, a daily show, but you do sometimes 7 days a week.
We did 7 this week, yes.
Wow.
Just depends on what interviews we get, bonus episodes, and things
That's
like
awesome.
That.
Awesome. And it's doing well, and you love being a podcaster.
Love being a podcaster. As I told you last time, there's a venture fund now. All the LPs are listeners of the show.
Awesome. And
so that has become a whole second. That's why we have more bonus episodes now, because we bring the companies on to tell us what they're doing.
Imagine if I had told my dad when I went off to college, Dad, I'm going to be a podcaster. Actually, if I told him, Dad, I'm going to work in radio, he would have mocked me. He would have said, under no circumstances.
Or I tell my parents that I'm going to run a venture capital fund. How did you do that? You went to get an MBA? No. I started a podcast.
Right. Yeah. Magic. It's the magic dust that we sprinkle on everything we do. Also from the wonderful Ecamm and his YouTube channel, Doc Rock in the House. YouTube.com/DocRock. Always good to see you, my friend. DocRock in the
Thank
USA.
You, sir. It's funny. We just started a brand new podcast, my marketing director, Katie, and I, and it's called The Flow, and we're talking about doing podcasts from a video first perspective. We have dropped your name so many times in the first two episodes.
I was the idiot who did that. Yeah.
Yeah. And people still don't understand how video first is an incredible play, because I still can chop all the audio pieces, but now we're in this social media thing with short form video, taking little chunks and making them into reels, shorts, and TikToks without chefing. Is one of the best ways to get your marketing
you
out
bet.
There. So,
you bet.
As I'm here to say thank you for pioneering it, and it's funny because
This is not a monthly show for women with bleeding disorders. I apologize. I looked up Flow Podcast, and it went to Bloodstream Media. So I would say the URL again.
Flow.ecamm.com.
I knew
we're teaching the workflow of how to generate
perfect.
A podcast from a video first perspective.
Perfect.
And the thing is, I was like, you know, one of the first things I did when I got my Apple TV One, the one that looks more like a Mac Mini than the Apple TV.
Oh, the old
was
one.
Go
yeah.
and subscribe to all of the Twitch shows.
Thank you.
And
my
it
friend.
Used to be on the, you know, first budget, because at that time, not
Nobody
a lot
else.
Of video podcasts
yeah.
out there.
Yeah.
And then most people don't remember that Apple had a button for video and that the button is now gone. So you have to go look for video podcasts, but it's been a thing.
If you and Katie forever. Want me to come on, I will be, or Lisa, because our Lisa, my wife and our CEO, is also really good at explaining the economics of a video
Lisa's
podcast.
Lisa's better looking than you.
She's
but
a lot better looking.
I love you the most. So.
Well, you just let me know. I'll be glad to do that. And Denise Howell, I miss This Week in Law.
I know, I do too. And yeah. We all have podcasts coming out of our ears on this episode of TWiT, apparently. I am so grateful to know about the flow.ecamm.com.
Yeah.
Podcast, because I'm definitely going to watch that. I'm going to recommend it to some folks I'm working with, because I am going to have my own podcast again.
Yay!
I don't think that I'm allowed to say where or when. My partner in this is very cloak and dagger about what we're doing and when and where it's all happening, but it's soon.
I am so glad to hear that.
I get my own show and I'm co-hosting a show with him.
So please, when it launched, come back and tell us, because I want to plug it like crazy. I wish we were still doing This Week in Law, but I'm just glad somebody is. That's great.
Yeah, no, it's not going to be This Week in Law. It's going to be slightly different, but it will be fun. I've got a couple of shows in the can already, and so yes, you'll be the first to know.
Yay. And there are still, of course, many episodes of This Week in Law, almost 500 of them on our website at twit.tv/TWIL. Our show today is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Actually, this is a related thing, because IT Pro TV was started by two guys, Tim Broom and Don Pezet, who were IT trainers, but in a more traditional classroom setting. And this was some years ago at NAB. I was on a panel with Adam Carolla and some others talking about video and podcasting way back when at NAB. And Tim and Don were at the panel. We talked afterwards. They said, you know, maybe we could do this with IT training. And it was there that the idea for IT Pro TV was born. Now, fast forward about 8 or 9 years, and IT Pro TV is huge. They've done so well. They launched in 2013. They now have 7 studios open every day, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., creating great new content. You can watch IT Pro TV on your TV. You can watch it on your computer. They have apps for, you know, all the major platforms like Apple TV. You can actually learn IT the easiest possible way. And let me tell you, if you've got a business, it's not just for people getting into IT. You have an IT team. You need them to keep up on this, right? Because IT is constantly changing. To recertify, to learn new skills, to polish up old skills. Now, you might set up a training system for them, but you got to make sure you do one that they're going to love, that they're going to use, and that's IT Pro TV. 80% of users who start a video on IT Pro TV go all the way through because it's engaging. It's fun. They really know what they do. They have instructors. They call them edutainers. They're experts in the field, but they also communicate so well their passion for IT. They communicate that knowledge, and that's what keeps you engaged in the shows. 5,800 hours of training. You can get all the training and certs for your team done in one place. Every vendor, every skill you need, Microsoft, Cisco, Linux, Apple, security, cloud, everything you want your team to know. And their dashboard is great for the business plan. You can track team results, manage seats, assign and unassign team members, access monthly usage reports to make sure that your investment is paying off. You'll see all the metrics you need, logins, viewing time, tracks completed, and more. You can create your own subsets of users. So you can say, you three, you need, look at this, look at the cheesehead. You three, you can study this, you can study that. Assignments can be individual episodes, all 20 to 30 minutes. So you could say, hey, at your lunch break, I want you to watch this. Or you could do full courses. And they've got all the advanced reporting you need to get insight into your team's viewing patterns and progress over any period of time. If you've got to justify it to the guys upstairs at the C-suite, you get beautiful visual reports that will really show you and show them the progress your team is making. So whether you're an individual looking to get into IT, an IT professional looking to expand your knowledge, or you've got a team that you want to keep up to date, IT Pro TV is a one-stop shop. Give your team the IT development platform they need to level up their skills while enjoying the journey. I mean enjoying it. For teams of any size, from 2 to 1,000, Volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/twit. And if, when you're talking to your account executive, you mention the secret word, TWIT30, you can get at least 30% off, maybe even more on a business plan. TWIT30, that's the offer code, itpro.tv/twit. We thank them so much. I congratulate Tim and Don on the job they've done. They've really made this into the best place to learn IT. And I feel a little bit proprietary about it. We've been with them ever since then. itpro.tv/twit. Offer code TWIT30. Thank you, IT Pro TV, for supporting This Week in Tech. I'm curious what you all think of this. Google is going all in. They're buying ads. They've created a site to get Apple onto the RCS bandwagon. It's time for Apple to fix texting. It's not about the color of the bubbles, says the website. It's the blurry videos, the broken group chats, the missing read receipts and typing indicators, no texting over Wi-Fi, and more. Is this going to work? What do you think, Brian? Is this a good strategy for Google?
I don't think so, because, first of all, the rest of the world is on WhatsApp, right?
Mm-hmm.
I met with somebody from Singapore this past week, and it's like I'm like, well, here's my phone number. He's like, what are you talking about? We're connected on WhatsApp. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. So the rest of the world is already locked down. They here in North America, at least with the younger folks, you know, you've got iMessage sort of, and so essentially all they're trying to do, what they wanted to be.
I'm sorry.
They want to get rid of the green bubble, but they're making the argument of, well, messaging should be a standard, which generally I'm in favor of, except for the fact that like they're shoving a standard that most of the world kind of doesn't need or want, and so this would require sort of, you know, people rewriting stuff from the ground up and people adopting new things, and so like I don't think that there's anywhere for them to go. This is just, to my mind, a naked play at the regulators to try to put them on
the thing. The audience is not Apple or Apple users. It's regulators. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Because Apple users are just going to thumb their... This is, like, stupid. Yes, you're a green bubble. Get out of me. Get out of my life. Apple users are perfectly happy with messages. Right, Doc Rock?
100%. And I think RCS is more problematic. If anything, it would probably be better on our end to open up the iMessage side and let them in. But that would be hard, too, because the thing that makes iMessage works is you know what devices are talking. So it can be easier to secure. The disadvantage of the Android platform is it's everywhere. So, you know, you can find all kind of random things. I just got this really cool live streaming box called YOLO Box Pro, and I just realized recently it's basically an Android box. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think we can never get to this RCS thing no matter what they're trying to do.
Google says it's not about the color of the bubbles. iPhone users get a bad texting experience.
Really? No, we don't.
No. Really? I don't think so.
Really? You want a bad texting experience?
My favorite thing in beta is sending a text and then getting rid of it. I've been having so much fun playing with that.
The disappearing text.
That thing is glorious because we have all seen, and it's not even just because you want to say something angry and delete it. It's just messing up and then, you know, wanting to fix it. So, yeah, it's like the delete button on Twitter. We actually have it come in September to the regular Muggleverse.
But go ahead and then come right here.
I was going to tell you what an intriguing idea you had about this being aimed at regulators, but I'm just trying to think through that and understand, okay, what would catch the regulators' attention? Regulators are already upset with Apple about things like the App Store. Is the blue box a sufficient, you know, cornering of the market? There are so many other texting alternatives that aren't Apple. I don't think it's really an antitrust concern.
But see, that's the tell that I think that they're targeting regulators with this, because if they wanted to be really expansive and be like, you know what, messaging should be an open standard like email, like any number of other things, right? Then they would be including Meta in this. They would say, hey, by the way, Telegram, everybody, let's integrate this one standard. So this is the baseline standard in the same way that you have baseline SMTP and all this good stuff. They're not. They're going after specifically Apple, and these ads are in the United States. So that says to me there's one specific target.
I think
target
you
here.
May. This makes a lot more sense. I mean, Apple users are just going to say, yeah, right, Google. And I think Android users are going to say, Google, you have the worst messaging history in the world. You're telling us that you should, after Allo and Hangouts and Chat and Meet and Duo, you're telling us you've got a better way? Pfft. Give me a break. I don't think anybody buys this.
Remember when we were all like just gung-ho to get that Google Wave invite?
Wave!
No!
I remember when Allo came out. Actually, Allo was a pretty good solution. But I think you also, you nailed this, Brian, that nobody really is even using SMS messaging anymore. They're all using data-based messengers. In fact, here is a map of the world's most popular messaging apps worldwide. Apple's Messages is not even on the list. Facebook Messenger is big in North America. WhatsApp is 31% of the market. They're the largest. Telegram, 4%. And then, of course, in Asia, you've got WeChat and Line. It's just not... Apple's not even in this mix.
Wait, who's the blue?
Blue is WhatsApp? Line.
WhatsApp.
Oh, Line. WhatsApp, I'm sorry.
No, WhatsApp.
Line is light blue. Yeah, that's not good. Yeah. WhatsApp, dominate. Yeah, 31%.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, that's WhatsApp. Yeah. I mean, it is a broken system, because there's, you know, if you're on WhatsApp and your buddy's on Telegram, one of you's got to give. It is a broken system. There's no interoperability.
Right. Which, again, if that was the tack they were taking, which is, you know what, let's clean this all up. Let's let everything interoperate. Everyone join us. They're not taking that tack. They're taking the tack of attacking one particular competitor, and not even, as you're pointing out, the most popular competitor.
Yeah. Can
I ask a question to all of you? How have the telecommunications carriers let WhatsApp gain their market share here?
I was sitting here thinking the exact same thing. Is like when SMS first started getting attacked, how did nobody pivot into let's figure this out before they lost control? So you are on it 115%.
I'll tell you the answer. Do you remember how expensive SMS was? You were paying a couple of bucks for like a megabyte worth of data. I mean, like more than that. It was ridiculously expensive. They made so much money on SMS, they didn't want anybody to leave SMS.
Classic innovator's dilemma, because the innovation was this is 100% free. Although WhatsApp charged $1 a year or something. But, you know, there's no way that AT&T and Verizon 15 years ago, we're going to be like, you know what? Turn it all off. The billions of dollars we're making on text messages, turn it off tomorrow, and we're going to give this away for free. They would never do that until they were forced to.
In fact, you know, their answer to this was stop charging for SMS. Just build it into your bill, effectively, because nobody pays per message anymore. But in the early days of SMS, not even that long ago, everybody paid per message. It was hugely profitable for them.
Right. That's why you still get these weird disclaimers about, you know, messaging fees may apply. What are those?
Who's paying those? Where they missed a boat was at that time, AdRev from, you know, banner ads and, you know, web stuff was very big at the time. If they started it back in the day where, you know, every couple of messages you would get a message from Pepsi or Coke or Expedia or whatever, and we would have gotten used to it and not cared, and they would own the ad rev space right now. Imagine if WhatsApp figured out a way to turn ad revenue into their chatting platform. You know, they would just be bigger. So it's funny because they could have found a way to pay for what they thought they were losing money on, but they just didn't think about it. They're being greedy.
They were thinking about it. In fact, I remember the founders of WhatsApp left Facebook in a huff because Facebook was going to introduce ads into WhatsApp, and they were furious about it.
Yeah, I meant the telecoms.
The telecoms. Well, you would think the telecoms would have said, well, I mean, that's what RCS, I guess, is a late answer to this conundrum of, oh, shoot, we're losing everybody to Apple's messages and WhatsApp and all of this. But I remember Google was pushing RCS for a long time, and the telecoms didn't even want it. It took them a long time to come along. I don't know if they're technical issues as well. We actually had something I thought really good called XMPP that was a really good messaging protocol. It was cross-platform. It could work with SMS. If everybody at Google initially supported XMPP, if everybody had supported that, we might have had a solution. But it was in fact, Google even abandoned it for a long time. It was the universal messaging standard in the until about five or six years ago.
Remember, famously, Steve Jobs said they were going to open source FaceTime as well. Yeah. So everybody, when it's convenient for them, talks about how interoperability for messaging should be a thing. But then,
nobody wants it. They all want silos. Yeah. Remember, we used to have Pigeon and what were those multi-messenger programs?
Oh, yeah.
They were great. Adium on the Mac.
Adium, yeah.
ICQ was
well. ICQ not, was I mean, dominant, remember? But then there was AIM.
That was my thing.
And so it was one thing that would one messaging app that would use AIM and ICQ. And Trillion was another one. I think those are the big three.
Use Adium.
Adium is on the Mac. Trillion was on PC. Those are the big three.
I really thought Text America was going to dominate the market.
Mo blogging. God, that's a memory from the past.
God, what was that one? It's like a post-it note app that I used to use. It was called Post Something, and I thought it was the coolest thing to just.
There's a really missed opportunity. Boy, I have thought about Text America in so long. They were dominant both in moblogs, right? Mobile. They were the first. They're before Instagram. There was Text America. It was an online photo site. They called it Moblogging.
Oh, I know what it was called. It was called Post.io. I think that's what it was called. Post.io.
Post.io. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Wow. You know we're getting old when we're thinking about technologies that nobody, they go, what are these people talking about? What are they talking about?
And this is just what we do now. We sit around and talk about remember that
Text
thing?
America.
Yeah.
Oh, I was all into Text America. It was 2006. This is what happened. They were free, and then they started charging membership fees in July 2006. And by December 2007, history.
But you know what, Leo, what you're talking about, like that gets into like the recent story about how the Kardashians and everybody had that backlash about Instagram. And someone much smarter than me made the point that this is true for everyone, that like you have nostalgia for social media for when you first discovered the platform and it was perfect because it was just your friends and you were expressing yourself for the first time. And every generation sort of has that sort of experience, you know, going back to GeoCities and what have you. So like it's inevitable that it's sort of like, you know, no one goes there anymore. It's too popular. Like everybody has that platonic ideal of what it was like when they first found a platform.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 5-6 years on, 10 years on, when your boss is on there, your grandmother's on there, you kind of hate it.
You know, Brian, it's funny you say that because when IG first came out, we were at like Macworld 2012 or 2010, something like that. And I remember because when I got the post that IG was coming out, Leo and a bunch of people, Andy, they were doing a talk on the stage, which was at the back of the hall in Moscone. And we were in the Tua booth just freaking out of his new IG thing. And I remember later that day, the only thing to argue about on IG was, is it okay to post a picture later? Yes. And they used to be like, no, this is not later, Graham. You got to post it when you get it. And then it switched within a matter of days. It switched to that's taken with a DSLR.
Yes. That's what it has to be a camera phone. What are you putting your DSLR photos on there for?
But Doc, this is what I'm talking about with the cycle. What's that Be Real thing that's supposedly the new hot social
network?
Oh,
it's over already.
It has to be an instant photo.
It's just like already over.
I'm sure.
Isn't Be Real already over?
The last numbers I saw,
Cypress
they were still
Be Real
growing.
Or the app.
In fact,
Cypress
now,
I prefer.
According to TechCrunch, the CEO of Be Real had to send out a message to people at the company to stop you being careful about Be Real. So the idea of Be Real was it would pop up a message on your phone. Okay, now take a picture, whatever you're doing, because it's in real life. And it would take a picture with both the front-facing and the back-facing camera. So it'd get you as a selfie and whatever you were doing. But people were doing it and not realizing they were revealing corporate secrets.
You got to go to the break room.
Yeah.
Right.
So this is from the CEO of Be Real. I saw a post on LinkedIn this week from an old buddy of mine. We were on a squash team together, blah, blah, blah. Dave is an analyst at Goldman now and said his summer intern tipped him off on secret data from Morgan Stanley. How did she find out? Her friend posted it on Be Real. She took a selfie at her desk, but on the other side of the camera, right on a laptop, were trade secrets out in the open, ready for anyone to steal. So be careful while you be real. And I think
isn't the other, I haven't used it, but isn't the other trope of it that everybody does this at the same time? So it's almost like a point.
No. Right. You have one window in it. Well, in a day. So I think it changes regionally and the time changes every day. Like, so it's not 3 o'clock mm-hmm. for everybody every day. Right. But you mm-hmm. do only get one window a day. So that the idea is that immediacy of, it's not the asynchronicity of social media that we're used to. Right. Yeah. It's what I'm doing right now. It's what you're doing right now. It's what everyone's doing right now.
But I don't think it was like a day in the life where it was everybody at the same time. I think it was kind of somewhat randomized. But the other thing was, if you missed that window, which the implication was that you are constantly have your phone turned on because you only have a few minutes when that alert goes. I would miss it every time. But then you could, like a tardy student, post a late Be Real, and it would be and it would be marked, Leo posted this 3 hours late. And unless you posted it, you couldn't see your friend's Be Real from that day. The whole thing was just scolding and stupid, and I think it's had its day already. 3 seconds later, it's over. It's actually been around since 2020. It just, as is often the case, you know, somebody discovers it, then an influencer uses it, and all of a sudden everybody's using it.
But, you know, look, again, to put this in the context of how social networks succeed, that's a gimmick, right?
Yeah.
That may or may not pay off for them. But so was Snapchat at the beginning. So the key for having a social network that lives on is you have to have a gimmick that makes it different. And then you have to be around long enough to, again, hook a generation into what? Talking to each other. So it's like you hook them with the gimmick, and then if you can keep them around long enough that a cohort of 16 to 21 year olds, that's where they go to talk with their friends, then it doesn't matter what the gimmick is. You can then go on and do stories, you can go on and do all these other things. It's but in the end, what makes a social network stick is we all get hooked on whatever network, again, based on a certain age or something, and then that's how we communicate with our friends.
Twitter was, what, 108 characters, right? Or 120?
Right, and I'm sitting here trying to remember what its original prompt was. Was it what's happening? Or?
Yeah.
Something like that.
So it was like, what's happening right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. But and then the thing with Twitter is it evolved, and they listened to users and evolved judiciously. There was a good article, though, in The New Yorker. We've been kind of talking about this all week. This was at the end of July. TikTok and the Fall of Social Media Giants. And the premise is social media is over. So what was the promise of Facebook and Twitter and social media in the early days? It was you follow your friends, your family, your high school girlfriend, your high school boyfriend. You know, you follow the people you care about and you'll get updates about their lives. It was social. It was a group. But what quickly happened, and I think you can blame YouTube for this, is the rise of the creator. And now all the social platforms have become creator platforms. That's what's happening at Instagram. It's stopped being about the pictures your friends post, and it's turning into TikTok. because YouTube and TikTok succeed, because creators are creating compelling content that you spend more time looking at than your friends and family ever did. And Facebook realized this. They went to the algorithm. So the premise of this article by Cal Newport, and I think it's accurate, is that what we're really seeing is the rise of creator media and the fall of the social network. Discuss.
I am
well,
a
that's why Be Real
coach.
Was
this
there,
is
right?
My job.
Well, you disagree, Doc Rock?
No. I'm a content creation coach. This is my job.
Oh, you're right. That's teaching, what you do is content. Yeah,
I teach people how to use the content. I hate the words. I'll just use them because they work. People understand them. To use the content creator economy to either expand your businesses, launch new businesses, like get out there. This is literally what I teach people, because if you really spend some time on YouTube and look at the good content that's out there, which there are a lot, but it's so much fun to make fun of the trash, right? If you're on Instagram Reels or TikTok even, looking at some of the great contents out there, there's a lot, but it's so much fun to make fun of the trash. And this is what people do. And anybody who back in the day was a film buff, you know, like Christina Warren and I used to talk about movies all the time when we were at Talk. And she's a legitimate film buff, right? We knew what the good movies were. And people would be like, oh, there's nothing good at the Cinemaplex. No, maybe not. But there's some dope movies out there. You just got to go find them. You know what I'm saying? And you're right. I think that content creator generated media in the next 5 or 6 years are going to blow past everything that's out there. And even the Amazons and the Apple and the Netflix are starting to pick up on smaller production houses as opposed to the big stuff.
But
as they throw money at their big shows.
You were right. You said that's what Be Real was trying to do, was create a social.
Right.
But I think
that's why kids are still on Snap too. They're not on Snap to follow Beyonce or whatever. Right. They're on Snap to be with their friends.
And I think why Discord, for instance, our Discord in the club, that's become a social network because it's just, there's no ads, there's no algorithm that doesn't surface content that's sticky. It's just what people are talking about. The New York article also points out a hazard, because Facebook, when it was your friends, you couldn't leave Facebook. That's where your friends are. As soon as it just becomes content, another TV channel, it's no longer sticky. That's why TikTok can beat them, because TikTok's doing a better job of surfacing creative content. And really, if you think about it, TikTok is just a TV channel. Right? That's all it is.
100%. It's, yes. For me, anyway. I mean, everybody's feed is different, right? But there's a
everybody's
whole lot of
feed
food.
Yes, exactly. It's a TV channel that is algorithmically and very sensitively and cleverly algorithmically tuned to just what you want. And you want food.
It does the channel flipping for you.
Yes. Sorry. So instead of the food, you don't watch you might watch the Food Network, Denise, right? But that
No, I only watch TikTok.
TikTok has become your food network. And for me, it's the bikini network. And for, it's different from, no, it's not. I'm just kidding. But because my son is a food creator and he's done very well on TikTok. So I do get a lot of food as well. But it becomes, imagine what if when you turn on your TV was so smart that it knew exactly what you wanted to watch at this very moment and put on shows. And because we're all short attention span, You flick up, you get the next show. It's always constantly entertaining. That's why you have to end up spending, waking up at 4 a.m, having spent 4 hours of vital sleep time on TikTok. It's brilliant.
Right. And to Doc
the
Rock's
secret
point,
thing is,
go ahead, Denise, and then Doc.
YouTube is that as well, just in a longer, more produced format.
YouTube taught us. YouTube was the first to do it, I think. Go ahead, Doc.
Yeah. What I've been talking to my people about a lot is for all my friends or, students that come to me and they're saying, well, I don't like the way the algorithm works and this and that. I'm like, you can control the algorithm. And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, when you see something that you like, don't just hit the heart button. Leave an actual comment. Leave a relevant comment or something of that nature. If you see something that you don't like, do not comment on it. Do not go to tell that person they're dumb. Do not go to tell the person you hate them or whatever. Just let it go, Elsa. And if you do that, it's all good.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, subscribe. because that
yes, and subscribe. Subscribe is important. So give the merit where the merit is due. Like the things that you like. Conversate with the people or even the people in the chat and stuff you like. And the algorithm will show you exactly what you ask for. But if you're out there talking about all the stuff you hate, the algorithm will just keep showing it to you. So, like, you actually control the algorithm.
And by the way, this is why I'm announcing my retirement. Because I can't possibly compete. I do 3-hour shows, as somebody in the chat room is pointing out. And I don't pay any attention to what you're interested in. I have no way of knowing.
It's
going to
be This Week in TT. This Week in TikTok with Leo. I'm just waiting for the dance. Rev just posted, Devo released Whip 42 years ago. I'm old.
Devo released Whip it 42 years ago.
That was my thing when I was a kid. I was in high school.
With the flower pots on the head.
So was I.
Yes. Gumby, I could change my mic cover to purple if you want, but not in the middle of the show.
I like the orange. I think it's good.
I think our generation has to just take a victory lap because the 80s and the 90s, first of all, they were great to kind of live through while we were there. And now they're just back. There's so much nostalgia for those time periods.
Oh, yeah. Yes. There's a lady on TikTok and IG. I forget her name. It's something CS. And she does these things where she's showing the Gen X is loving this song. I'm sorry, the Gen Z is loving this song. And the millennials pushed him out of the way. And then they listen to the version that's the millennial version. And then we come in is like, nah, it's actually older than you think. We slide them out the way. And then so the most recent one is off the Tom Tom Club track, which is like was then, you know, Mariah Carey Fantasy for the millennials. But then now it's some other song with the big, big energy. And it's like, man, Tom Tom Club is 1977, player. I don't know where you at.
You guys, you're making me feel really old because I, for years, have been saying Bang a Gong was originally T-Rex. Forget this Twisted Sister. So it comes around. It goes around and it comes around. I'll never forget years ago listening to the high school marching band. We used to live in a house on the hill that we'd hear the high school marching band. And then they would have lunch and they'd play rock music. And it was always music from the 60s and 70s, I thought. This is something going on that's very strange. So maybe there is this history. Maybe this is what happens is there's nostalgia for the stuff before you were born. I do want to give credit actually to Scott Rosenberg, who was, I think, the founder of Salon, I want to say. He used to write for The Examiner, I think. Because he wrote in Axios, The Sunset of the Social Network. And it was he, I think, who first pointed out that these social network is being replaced now by the discovery engine, by the television channel, by TikTok and YouTube and so forth. And it makes it hard for these companies to succeed because they just like the phone company that missed the boat on SMS. As you said, it's the innovator's dilemma, Brian. It's hard to take that business that's making you a lot of money and say, yeah, it's over. Anyway, very interesting article from Scott Rosenberg on Axios. Let's take a little break. We will come back with more with our esteemed panel, Brian McCullough from the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast. Do you ever do your internet history stuff anymore? I ask you that every time.
Every now and again when, occasionally someone will reach out to me and I'll be like, oh, yes, you qualify. I will dust off the history hat for you. But... yeah, not really much anymore, seeing as how I do shows 7 days a week.
Yeah, you don't have time. Who got time for that?
Right.
By the way, I'm informed that Twisted Sister did not do Bang a Gong. It was Power Station, but you knew that. Also, Doc Rock, great to have you, YouTuber Doc Rock, creative. Are you happy to have Renee Ritchie now representing creators at YouTube?
Absolutely. It's so funny for two reasons. One, because we needed a creative liaison at YouTube in general.
There was no one doing that?
Nobody was really doing it. And then it's funny because I'm like, yo, Renee and I have been friends for years, so I feel like I got a man on the inside. It's kind of funny.
We do.
And it's not that, you know, I'm like, I'm never going to bother him and call him up and be like, yo, R, man, hook me up. I always call him R2. But, I just really appreciate that they decided, and I wish more companies would think about that. You need liaisons for the actual users of the platform, or in their case, the creators of the platform. So it was a very awesome move for Renee. He well deserved it. And yes, nice to have a homie on the inside.
Yes. And Denise Howell, the one and only from D Howell, denisehowell.info, D Howell on the Twitter. Our show today brought to you by a company I'm fond of. I love these guys, Mint Mobile. You've seen the incredible Ryan Reynolds ads. I just love their attitude, their style. And Mint, what Mint Mobile's doing, I think, is really important for consumers. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by big wireless, big cellular, if we've learned anything, we learned there's always a catch. So perhaps when I tell you, you're just not going to believe it. When I tell you Mint Mobile offers premium wireless service at $15 a month, you're going to say, no, Leo, because I'm going to end up paying three times that, I know. No, it's not true. I know because I use Mint Mobile. There isn't a catch. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is they're the first company to sell wireless service online only. No stores, saves them a lot of overhead. And also really cheesy ads. And they pass those sweet savings directly on to you. Mint Mobile is really remarkable. Premium wireless. All plans come with unlimited talk and text, unlimited, plus high-speed data on the nation's largest 5G network. It's T-Mobile, I'll tell you. And you're paying only for, you know, what you need. So for most people, $15 a month with just 4 gigabytes of data a month is more than enough. Check your bill. See how much data you use every month. They have unlimited plans, $30 a month. I bought the year-long plan. It's a great deal. You know, you can bring your own phone if you want. They'll send you the SIM, no charge. Everybody else charges it for the SIM, not Mint Mobile. So you can use your own phone, keep your phone number if you want. You can move it over. You keep all your contacts and stuff. Or you can buy phones from them. In fact, I got an iPhone SE for a great price from Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile is just really about giving you the service you want from people who really love the biz. Mint Mobile. Get premium wireless service starting at $15 a month. There's no catch. 10 gigs, $20 a month. 15 gigs. That's the one I got. 15 gigs a month for $25 a month. Or the unlimited plan. You pick what you need. I think for most people, 4 gigs a month is plenty. That's $15. What are you paying now for wireless service? A lot more than that. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, mintmobile.com/twit. They got a family plan too, you bet. mintmobile.com/twit. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/twit. Thank you, Mint Mobile, for doing what you do and for supporting our show. We appreciate it. And you support our show by using that address. Please do, because then they know you saw it here. mintmobile.com/twit. Here's a big sea change. I don't know what this means. Maybe our esteemed panel can explain it. For the first time ever in Q2, cable lost broadband market share, a negative growth quarter. People are moving away from cable internet service. How do we explain that? The top 7 U.S. cable companies lost over 60,000 subscribers April, May, and June. Comcast, the number one internet service provider in the country, was flat, gained no new users. Number 2, Charter lost 21,000 customers. Number 3, Altice lost 39,000 customers. Is this just a blip, or is this signaling a sea change?
Wasn't this the promise of 5G? 5G was going to be so fast that it was going to be. So you add that to the fact that not everybody needs a computer. If you just do all of your computing on your phone, and you can't really tell the difference in speed between, because, you know, remember, even if you have the best ISP in the world, you're still limited to your Wi-Fi speeds. So maybe people are just like, hey, this is good enough. No worries.
I think you nailed it.
Yep.
You know, I have a big PS to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
The PS to that is for power users. Cable can't get fiber to a lot of places. So I know that we dumped our cable to go with AT&T because they could get us fiber.
Yeah, AT&T has been aggressive in rolling out fiber. In fact, it's interesting because Google had stopped doing fiber, Google Fiber. They just announced, I think, 5 new cities, and they're going to be rolling out more fiber. So maybe this is fiber's time. It's 5G's time. I agree. Both T-Mobile and Verizon are selling home internet service now wirelessly. For my daughter, who lives near a highway, so she's near a Verizon Towers, I bought, it's $25 a month. She's getting 150 megabits down, I think 20 up, for nothing. And it's just a wireless box you put in there, you turn it on, and it works. Doc Rock, you were going to say something.
I was going to say, like, a couple of things that are going on as well. When everybody started looking at places to sort of, you know, pinch pockets a little bit, if you have, for instance, Verizon, they were doing your Netflix streaming doesn't count against your bill, right? So each one of the companies has a thing that they offer for free without, you know, using your data plan or whatever. So, for instance, in AT&T, it was HBO, which I think might change now that it got sold. But anyway, people are using that to watch what they need to watch or just ignoring the watching altogether and just watching the social stuff because, like, T-Mobile has, you know, streaming. You can stream stuff on YouTube or whatever without taxing your bill. So then you don't need that at the house, and you get your broadband outside at work or whatever to do the heavy lifting stuff. But most of your just consumption stuff you can do on iPad, iPhone, Apple TV, Android TV boxes and the like.
It's kind of like the end of the landline phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
People just doing everything on their cell. It is the case that fixed wireless, that's what they call the T-Mobile and Verizon home internet. It's fixed wireless. Huge growth. 816,000 new subscribers in Q4.
Wait, what was that?
816,000.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go. T-Mobile and Verizon are seeing steady gains for their FWA fixed wireless services, which together picked up 816,000 subs in Q2, April, May, and June of this year.
Well, again, this is what they told us was going to happen. I just, got so jaded about the fact that 5G showed up.
5G,
we're not having the telemedicine surgeries yet or whatever. But so I thought it was overblown hype, but maybe it's just now happening.
I mean,
here's the cool thing to look out for. If T-Mobile is growing at that clip and somehow... I'm a Deadpool Mobile subscriber, which runs on T-Mobile. So, like, if Ryan and McElhinney can get over there and talk it up and get them to allow us to get one of these in the house, hey, it's on. I'm switching.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't you love a Mint Mobile fixed wireless?
100%.
Yeah.
I call it Deadpool Mobile, and my girlfriend's other boyfriend is Ryan Reynolds, so I actually like him, too. I'm like, you know, hey, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible, and I do believe if they could figure out a way to let some of the, I want to call them MVNEs, but that's a hard drive. what do you call MVNO. It? The smaller mobile companies.
MVNOs, yeah.
MVNOs.
Mobile Virtual Network.
If you could figure out a way to get those guys on where they're using some of the other stuff, it'll spread quicker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what, Leo? This is also, I just switched to a different carrier, which I won't name for various sponsor reasons and things like that. But
yeah, we should mention Mint Mobile is a sponsor.
Mint Mobile is great.
But you don't have to say that at all. You can even mention your other carrier.
They sponsor my show as well, so I do love Mint Mobile.
Oh, okay. So you don't want to say the other carrier.
The other thing that has just happened since I did that switch, I never used to get millimeter wave. And I have, and I live in New York City, so that was also why I got jaded. I was like, okay, it's a year, 2 years into them switching this on.
It's just hype.
But now I've been getting it,
really?
And it actually is noticeable that it's faster. So
I don't. Yep. I mean, still millimeter wave, which is the fastest, you know, gigabit plus telco cellular data, is very, very limited, both in locations and range. It only goes 800 feet, so you must be living near a tower
and weird places, because it's on my walk. I do walks and runs around Prospect Park, and in Windsor Terrace on Prospect Park Southwest, boom, it shows up.
Exactly.
But then, you know, Grand Army Plaza, where there's tons of people, it never shows up.
Right.
But yeah, when it does show up, it is noticeable.
Yeah,
you will notice a difference.
I think the big change, though, was the mid band, the rollout of the mid band. So there are three bands. There's millimeter wave, which is a very, very high frequency. There's the 700 megahertz low frequency, which is really no faster than LTE. So you could be on it. Technically, it's 5G, but you'd never know. But, and I'm seeing it here, I'm seeing it everywhere. This is what my daughter is getting. There's this mid-band, which is very fast. It's noticeably faster than LTE. That is being very widely rolled out by all the big three carriers. And I think that is really what's happening. And that's the, I like you, Duck. I mocked 5G. I remember that Apple announcement, not last year, but the year before, where they said 5G every 3 seconds. You know, maybe it was they were too early on it. Maybe they were, you know, jumping on this marketing thing. But I think it is now starting to happen. And I think maybe that you're exactly right. That's what's happening to Comcast, Charter, Cox, Altice, Mediacom, Cable One, and Breezeline. Now,
I noticed that Spectrum's not on the list, but it's funny because that's our building contract, you know, for the condo.
Yeah.
They just came in and stuck in all of the internal fiber lines. So we're switching over to Spectrum fiber middle September while I'm on my road trip.
I think they're not on this list probably because they didn't announce their quarterly results this past week. But between the big broadband companies, they still have 75 million households of the 109 million households that are getting broadband. So they're still dominant.
What was that number that you said? 800,000 people in one quarter
in
switched
one quarter.
Over.
Yeah.
That's
nuts.
Significant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they only have 2.2 million. These are brand new services. And if they're growing at the rate of nearly a million a quarter, it ain't going to be long before. And that's got to be growing at the, you know, the cost of the cable companies. I think that's very interesting. Cable companies are suffering anyway. People are watching streaming now. It's a fascinating time to watch the turmoil in streaming services and in cable companies and the battle. And then now you're seeing, for instance, companies like Google and Apple come after sports contracts. We've talked before about the Sunday Ticket, which is a $2.5 billion contract with NFL. That DirecTV paid $1.5 billion for it, what is it, 4 or 5 years ago, has been losing $500 million a year on it. It's not been a very good deal for them. And they're not bidding on it when it comes up next year. But the companies that can't afford to bid $2.5 billion for Sunday Ticket are Google, Apple, Amazon. These are companies that are not in the traditional broadcast business or the cable business.
I would love Sunday Ticket on Apple TV Plus, but you got to make me one promise, Apple. You know I love you guys. I used to work there. Do not bring the cheeky announcement fee like you tried to do on MLB.
You're talking about Friday Night Baseball?
Oh, my God.
Everybody
agrees.
I'm checking
to see which of my homies I used to work with I can call and yell at, because that was just brutal. Leo and I would do a much better job like doing your games that what you call that feed. Don't do that. But I would love for you to get NFL Sunday Ticket.
They're also talking to get to Big Ten athletics. I think if Apple was smart, we've talked about this on Mac Break Weekly. If Apple was smart, they would use, and they've got Major League Soccer, right? They've got the U.S. Soccer yes. League. If they would use these as a test ground for doing a better job than the networks do. That's the real threat to the networks. What if we did it 4K? What if we used, you know, I don't know, modern technology? What if we put a camera in the huddle, you know? What if we
did
They've
done
a
lot
job?
Of that stuff with European football, soccer, where they have the multiple cams that you can choose from and things like that, yeah.
This is the opportunity for Apple. I mean, they're a technology company. Do that. And I'm a little disappointed that they haven't done that. All they did with Friday Night Baseball is have toned-down graphics, stupid music behind the announcements, and terrible play-by-play people.
And I'm a hardcore footy fan. I'm super happy that NBC got the contract and they're doing their best. But they're so American that they don't realize they will put up the chyron on top of the players.
Oh, no.
They haven't figured out where to put their chyrons.
No, and they keep
covering up the action. And I'm like, guys, really? What are you doing? Stop
You're talking
this mess.
The best, I think the best sport in the world, Australian rules football. Unbelievable sport. These guys are wearing short shorts. no pads. And they're biting each other's ears off. It's like, and it's in mud and it's crazy, but it's so much fun to watch. I think that's why Apple's doing soccer. I think Apple's really interested. Maybe you European types know it as football, but I think Apple's really interested in taking something that is not yet a huge sport in America, but has the promise of becoming a huge sport, and getting behind it and making it.
Well, and a league that, because it's not the league or the sport is willing to play ball with them.
Absolutely. Say, yes.
We've been the sport of the future in America since 1972. Hat tip, men and blazers. But the NFL, you do a deal with the NFL, they're going to tell you. Big Ten, they're going to tell you what you can and cannot do. MLS is going to be like, what do you want to do? Let's try anything.
This is the front page of MLS's website. The big announcement coming in 2023, and it's got an apple on it. I mean, yes, it's huge for them. It's a 10-year deal. So I do hope Apple does a better job with soccer than they do right now with baseball.
I hope so, too, especially for my Seattle Sounders fans in the building. Let's make this
happen. Hawaii have a MLS team?
No, that's why I got to be a Seattle Sounders fan.
That's sad. That's so sad.
Check his hat, Leo. He changed hats.
Oh, my God. For those of you not watching video, the black Ecamm hat has now been replaced with a Sounders lime green, very attractive Sounders hat.
I love Seattle Sounders. It's fun.
Seattle's got way too many good teams. We're going to have to do something about that.
It's Paul Allen.
Yeah, it was Paul Allen. Actually, no, he brought Portland. He brought the Trailblazers because he couldn't get the Mariners or the who's the Seattle NBA team? No, I can't remember.
It used to be Supersonics.
Supersonics. Yeah, that's right.
They went to Oakland.
That's right.
Not Oakland, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, Oakland. It's all the same. It's easily confused. Did you want to say something?
Yes. All I can think of is they're going to do a reality TV version of Ted Lasso.
Yeah, you're right. So, come to think of it, that's probably why Apple's interested in soccer.
Amazon, wait. Yeah. Amazon already does that because they're doing my team right now, Arsenal. They've done it for about 5 years in a row now. They get a team to allow their cameras into the locker rooms.
It's all or nothing. Yes, I love all or nothing.
Exactly.
They've been doing that with football. Now they're doing it with soccer. That's awesome.
It started with Notre Dame back in the day, which is funny because you mentioned Big Ten and everybody's trying to get us to join the Big Ten and I don't want that to happen. And then All or Nothing was like Manchester City last year. And I'm so glad that they're not doing, I'm a Manchester United fan. I'm glad they're nowhere near us.
Not the year for that. No.
No. Please stay away from us. Leave us alone.
If you want any evidence of how this can change a country's perception of sport, look at how F1 has taken off in the U.S. thanks to Drive to Survive, the Netflix show. I'm a brand new F1 fan because of that show. That you see it like that, or you see it like All or Nothing. All or Nothing is great is a great series, and you suddenly get it. You see the personalities, you understand what's going on. It is the best thing that can happen to a sport. So so I bet you anything, Amazon's going to buy a soccer team any minute now, or a league, or a whole darn league. Why stop at a team? That was the big conversation this week, as Amazon buying the Roomba. Folks, I guess last week that was the big story. And Amazon.
Wait, Roomba soccer?
Roomba soccer. Oh, my God.
Oh, that would be legit.
Oh, my God. And then if you put some cats on top of the Roombas playing soccer, you've got Roomba soccer cat videos. You can't lose. Put that on TikTok.
Roomba soccer would just be legit.
I love it. I love it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Elon Musk sells more Tesla shares. We haven't done a good Elon story in a while, have we? It's time. But first, Worldwide Technology and HPE. We love these guys. Worldwide Tech is at the forefront of innovation, working with clients all over the world to transform their businesses. You know, these days, if you're an enterprise, you need to know about technology. You need to be engaged. You need to see how it can change your business. But to do that, you need a partner. And you need a partner who understands business. I think this is really important. They're not just technologists. WWT understands business, understands your strategy, and is always working to make your strategy come alive using technology. So that's the kind of partner you want. And it all starts for WWT at their ATC, their Advanced Technology Center. It's a research and testing lab. Used to be the magazines would do this. Now WWT has completely taken over. It started, you know, about 10 years ago with a rack of equipment in one building. It's now in multiple buildings, over $500 million in equipment in the lab, all the latest technologies. And WWT's engineers use this to spin up proofs of concept, to do pilots so customers can select the best solutions, to test integrations with existing technology. So they're really the experts in cutting-edge technology. So it helps cut WWT's evaluation time down from months to weeks. Now their partners are using it, and this is the biggest change. Now WWT offers the ATC for you, for everybody. Anybody's a member of the ATC platform. It's free to join. Can get access to hundreds of on-demand and schedulable labs like HPE's Primera Storage Lab, along with labs representing the newest advances in everything you'd want to find out about for your business. Multi-cloud architecture, security, of course. I'll never forget going to see the ATC, and there was this whole rack, about two or three or four racks in a separate room, in a separate cage, completely separate. I said, what are those? And they said, well, that's where we do our virus testing and our security testing, our exploit testing. And we keep that, you know, air gap from the other ones off in a corner. But you know what? That's how committed they are. They really put the money into making this happen. You could study networking, of course, primary and secondary storage. They have all the storage solutions. They all light up differently. It's really quite beautiful. Data analytics, AI, DevOps. They're on top of all the latest technology, both hardware, software, operations, management, compliance. They're the experts. And thanks to the ATC, you can test out products and solutions before you go to market. Not just hands-on labs, you get access to technical articles, to expert insights, to demonstration videos and white papers, all the tools you need to stay up to date with the latest technology. If you are a CIO, if you work in technology at a big company and you're not using the ATC, you're missing out on one of the most important tools you could have. It's a physical lab space, sure, in St. Louis. We visited it a couple of years ago, but it's completely virtual now, which means if you're a member of the ATC platform, you can access it anywhere in the world, any day of the year. And while you're there, check out WWT's events and communities. We did a great event for them. It was so much fun. They are doing lots of panels. They have great communities. So it's a chance to learn about technology trends and hear the latest research and insights from all the experts. I am so impressed by WWT because they understand it's not just selling technology. It's about empowering their partners. It's about partnership. It's about community. And they do it so well. Whatever your business needs, WWT can deliver scalable, tried and tested, tailored solutions for you. They bring strategy and execution together to make this exciting new world happen. To learn more about WWT, the ATC, to gain access to all these free resources, very simple, WWT.com/twit. Just go there. You can create a free account on the platform and have at it. WWT, Worldwide Technology, at WWT.com/twit. It's time to make that new world happen. WWT is the partner you need. Thank you. And we're thrilled to partner with them too. Thank you, WWT, for supporting this week in tech. What is Elon up to? He just sold another big tranche of stock, almost $7 billion worth. So that means he has now sold how much Tesla stock? $32 billion worth of Tesla stock over the last year. Is it because he thinks he might be forced to buy Twitter? He offered $44 billion.
That's one of the theories.
What's the other?
The other theory would be that, you know, because a lot of people, conspiracy theory being that he just wants the price to come down. But what if, remember, half of it is his money and half of it is all of these.
You're talking about the Twitter price. He doesn't want the Tesla price to go down. He wants the Twitter price to go down.
Twitter price to come down.
Yeah. In fact, that's his fear because the Tesla price has been going down because he committed Tesla stock to this.
What if all the banks and everyone else in the consortium that's doing the other half of this deal with him is getting cold feet? And because they're like, we don't want to be on the hook for this necessarily anymore because it's overpaying. So he's sort of giving himself a cushion that if he can get the price to come down, he could do the whole deal himself with all his money, or at least most of his money.
Actually, I've been waiting for Denise to come on to ask about this because the trial is coming up October 17th. in the Chancery Courts in Delaware. Is this different somehow from a regular court, or is this just a funny name that Delaware uses for their court?
It's mostly a funny name that Delaware uses for their court.
They say it's widely recognized as the nation's preeminent forum for the determination of disputes involving the internal affairs of the thousands upon thousands of Delaware corporations. By the way, for no real reason, we are a Delaware LLC.
Oh, no, there's a real reason.
Oh, there is? Good. Why?
Oh, yeah. Because Delaware has very strategically over the years made itself the place where everyone wants to incorporate. It's very business advantageous in its laws. So you pay.
And in fact, I'm told one of the reasons the Chancery Court is part of that is because they're speedy.
Yeah.
And Elon wanted to slow this down. He said, no, can we put this off? And they said, nope, October.
So I think it's a trial court. It's like a superior court in any other state.
Is there a jury? No, it's just a panel of judges, or is there a jury?
I believe it's, that's a good question.
I don't see a jury box in this picture.
I don't see a jury box in the picture either, but I don't know. I don't think that, incorporating as a Delaware corporation means that you waive jury trial if you have disputes.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure, again,
there must be a jury in most cases. Yeah.
This is a contract case, and there may be questions of fact there probably are questions of fact as to what the evidence shows about what the parties did and didn't do, and whether the contract was breached. So I don't know if we're going to see a jury in this or not. I would be surprised if the parties waive a jury to be in front of this court and get more speed. That's something that could be the case.
Elon himself kind of implied that he's worried that this could go against him. He tweeted when he sold the stock, "In the hopefully unlikely event that Twitter forces this deal to close and some equity partners don't come through." Remember, I don't even know if the Chancery Court can force the equity partners to put up the money. That $44 billion is not all Elon's money. Some of it is from Saudi Arabia, Larry Ellison, a variety of equity partners. And I don't think they can be compelled they can easily say, yeah, well, guess what, Elon? We're not giving you the money now. So he says, in the unlikely event, hopefully unlikely event, that Twitter forces this deal to close and some equity partners don't come through, it's important to avoid an emergency sale of Tesla stock. So he's trying to cash out. He also says, and if I win in court, I'll buy the stock back.
It could be in the purchase and sale documents, too, that there's a choice of law and venue provision that puts them in this court and has various other restrictions that apply.
Oh, I'm sure that's in the contract, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, this was a case of Elon saying, I'm going to buy it, and Twitter saying, okay. First they took it. They said, oh, we're going to, no, poison pill. And then they gave in like 3 seconds later. But I think Twitter basically wrote the most advantageous contract they could. Elon basically said, as is, sight unseen, I don't care.
No diligence.
Nor due diligence. Sure. Yeah. And so, of course, Twitter said, yeah, and you're going to be tried in the Chancery Court. And not only is there a $1 billion breakup fee, but I think they want the whole amount, right?
The funny thing is, I actually did a segment on the show where I just read the opening paragraphs of the Twitter lawyer's response.
Oh, they were so dismissive of Elon, weren't they?
They're having so much fun. They're having so much fun.
Oh, my God. So I think he's maybe getting some cold feet. He also maybe said, he's tweeted, if Twitter, all Twitter has to do is give me their method of sampling 100 accounts and how they're confirmed to be real, and the deal can proceed on original terms.
That's not in the deal.
They don't have to give him anything.
And so then the other thing is when he started to ask for more stuff to find out about these bots, they gave him the whole fire hose. It's not like they withheld anything. They're like, okay, we're going to give you every single thing that we have. And knowing possibly that that's impossible for anyone to actually parse in time. But also, number two, like, if his argument is that there are bots. And there's more bots than you've told me. And so there aren't as many real users as you told me. The other problem is that he's on record publicly saying that the reason he wanted to buy Twitter was to solve the bot problem. So when you get into court and you say, I want to get out of this because there's all these fake users. He's, you know, on stage at TED telling people that the reason he wants Twitter is he wants to fix this and make it better.
I hope there's a Perry Mason moment where Twitter's lawyers say, Mr. Musk, you know that your lawyers sent us your entire phone log for the last 12 years. And I don't think that'll happen, but I'm sure Elon has very, very good lawyers. You're a guy you had on This Week in Law a few times. Andrew Torres does a great podcast, Opening Arguments. I'm sure you're familiar with it. And I listen to all of their shows about this whole thing. I think they're of the opinion that what this will end up happening is the court will not force him to buy Twitter, but will ask for a substantial, much more than $1 billion penalty, in effect, for basically throwing Twitter's business into turmoil. Is that possible?
Yeah, I think that's likely. I've always sort of been of the opinion that I'd be surprised if this stayed in court for too long.
Oh, they may settle. They're going to get together. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll never know the terms.
Yeah.
Denise, how common is it for someone to say, you signed a contract, I'm going to force you to honor this contract? And I know that it depends on if we're talking about, you know, small potatoes things, but huge, huge things. How often does a court actually say, I don't care, you have $1 million, you signed a contract for $1 million, you're going to pay the $1 million?
Oh, yeah. If this actually goes to trial and they have to perform under the terms of the contract and it's proven that they breached the contract, that's what will happen.
There is a very famous case in Delaware Chancery Court, IBP versus Tyson. Tyson had, which is the largest chicken processor in America, had agreed
I
to.
Thought we were talking boxy.
Had agreed to acquire IBP, which is something pork. It's the pork meat packing firm. Very much like Elon agreed to buy Twitter. And then Tyson broke it off. IBP filed a breach of contract suit, much like Twitter has, and the court ordered Tyson to go through with the purchase.
And that was wasn't that around COVID or something? So like they could argue
no.
Force majeure. No, okay.
It was similar in the sense that Tyson said, well, we hadn't seen the financials, and now that we've seen them, this is terrible. And then in fact, the judge said, well, no, you should have known. And some of the reason it's terrible is because of you. it's not an exact analog, and Andrew Torres does a much better job of explaining it than I do. But it's a fairly famous case, and it is the one example where you could say, yeah, the courts can force you to go ahead with the purchase. They did. They made Tyson buy IBP.
Denise, what if you don't have the money? What if something intervenes in between? And we know that Elon has the money because he has all the money. But can a contract be voided at that point because in the intervening time, I don't know, you lost half your whatever?
No, not at all. You'd still get a judgment that the party who the judgment favors can try and enforce however they can. It doesn't matter if there's no money there. They can go on.
They're
going
to garnish Elon's wages.
Yeah, they can go on a hunt for other assets.
May explain why Elon says, I sold all my houses. I don't know. He's living on somebody's couch, apparently.
The hunt for assets is going to be the new rendition of Hunt for October. Like, and a lot of these guys are like learning. You know, it's funny. Back in the day, Steve was probably one of the most brilliant. I'm sure he wasn't alone, but it's the one that we all know about. Of like setting himself up with the dollar salary. It's so hard to like get in trouble when you're like, hey, I just get paid a buck, you know, and then they'll work around it, of course, and try, like you say, to go after assets. But I don't know. Elon is just a weird character, and it's just what makes it worse. Like if he was more normal acting, I think more people would maybe side with him, but he just does strange things.
I have such mixed feelings about him because SpaceX is remarkable.
You and I both.
I had a Tesla. I was really impressed with what Elon had done. He didn't kind of remember. Part of the plan with Tesla was to get rich people to buy the expensive ones to finance the development of a low cost EV. And he had planned to sell the Model 3, I think, for $35,000. You can't get it for less than $46,000, $47,000 right now. So he never kind of lived up to that promise. But I think still we wouldn't have the electric vehicle market we have today without Elon and Tesla.
There is definitely a thing, and I don't know what it is, but again, I hate to keep bringing up Severance, but I swear it's on my head right now. There's a thing where people who are well-intentioned innovators start moving up the chain, and it's like they get at a very particular point where the billionaire switch comes in and they go BS crazy. Kanye fits in that description. Elon, you know, and that's why there's a whole entire song. I really like the old Kanye because he was always eccentric, but he got super weird once he got like dumb rich. And Elon did the same similar thing. Like he was this great guy for a minute. And then all of a sudden he just hit a level where let me start trying to like buy stuff. And yeah, a toxic wealth is probably the best explanation of it.
Eat the Oligarchs in our chat room says it's called toxic wealth. I like your handle, Eat the Oligarchs.
And, I mean, I don't want to hate on like capitalism or whatever like that because it's not really about that. But I just watched Loot. I just binge watched it because it's really short. And, you know, at the end, you know, one of the things that she said, which is funny because they're really trying to add in a little McKinsey and a little Melinda into this character. And she says billionaires shouldn't exist. Like, I can
kind
see
of agree.
Getting, yeah, it was a well-stated point. And then right after she went back to doing something billionaire oriented, which was, you know, they all say that. And they all act like they're being altruistic, but most of their altruism is feeding egos. And the legal side confuses me. The only thing I really, I know stuff about legal stuff, but my favorite term is frolic and detour, and I don't get to use that one.
Frolic in detour?
Yeah, that's my favorite legal term.
What does that mean? Do you know that?
When you're working for a company and you stop acting like an employee to do your own thing.
I'm frolicking. Oh yeah, we have many frolicking detours around here. That's a very
that's
popular.
That's a new one on me, Doc.
Okay.
Literally, I don't know. I learned it from one of my lawyer friends, and I thought it was the best thing I ever learned.
We need the incentive of possibly becoming a billionaire to get people to create, to innovate, to build companies. Is that a necessary incentive? Because that would be the argument for for having billionaires.
Yeah, and I get that's why that works. But what happens is, imagine, okay, so granted there's boards and there's other things in place, but someone like a single person, especially a person who has shown that there might be something, you know, ants not at the full picnic, to get over to a platform that controls that many people's communication, that's a scary thought. And I think anybody with that much power does get a little, you know, punch drunk. And so they're probably no longer good to single-handedly, you know, control a body of people. It almost stands to reason, like, how is it that, you know, 400 or 500 people are in charge of, you know, 390 million of us? It's a really weird situation. I don't know. I think it's time to rethink this.
So let me just clarify that frolic and detour and chancery courts are about of the same vintage.
1800s. 1800s, baby.
Yeah. And
the phrase originated in Joel versus Morris in an English case from the 1800s, which clarified, get ready for this, that a master is liable for actions a servant takes stemming from a master-servant relationship where a servant takes a detour while acting in the scope of employment but is not liable where a servant goes on a frolic of his own that exceeds the scope of employment. By the way, there's a great novel called A Frolic of His Own, but that's now I know where that term comes from. I had no idea at the time.
You're frolicking in the briars.
I'm frolicking on my own here.
episode
title.
And
if anyone's interested, yeah, no doubt, Frolic and Detours.
William Gaddis, who's one of my favorite authors. I don't know how well known he is. He wrote a book called JR. That's hysterical. But then he had a subsequent book called A Frolic of His Own. And obviously he knew all about Frolic and Detour.
And the Delaware Chancery Court has thoughtfully provided what they call a short history of the Court of Chancery that is a really, really long explanation of the history of that court since 1792. And wow. It goes back to equity courts in jolly old England, as a lot of our jurisprudence.
It's all common law,
does.
Baby. It all goes down to common law at some point.
Yes. Well, and they're the competition for common law. So the thing that I just discovered while you guys were talking about this, and it made me think about it, now I know why here our community college system, they're all based on chancellors. And the stuff that they do to come up with policies or check policies is actually a chancellor.
If you ever go, I know this because my dad was a professor at Brown University, but if you ever go to a graduation at one of the old schools, and you see the crazy gowns that the professors wear with the floppy hats and the velvet and all this, you realize it's completely a medieval institution. It's just straight out of, you know, the 15th century.
Hey, before we leave Elon, can I toss out my own conspiracy theory as to why he may have sold out all this stock?
Yes.
Maybe it's so that he can dim Starlink down so that it does not disturb astronomers and the global population. Have you guys seen Starlink yet?
Oh, yeah.
The satellite array?
A couple, maybe last year, my trainer says, oh, you won't believe what I saw in the sky last night. I'm sure it's a UFO. And he showed me a video of like 20 lights in a line going through the sky. I said, that's Starlink.
Oh, my God. I saw it for the first time. But this will forever be the summer that I saw Starlink in the Wyoming sky, you know, at
it does
low
look
orbit.
Like a UFO, doesn't it? Look at this.
Oh, it's insane when you see it and you don't know what it is.
So when they first launched the satellites, they launch how many on a rocket, John? Is 20 or 60, I think it is, on a rocket. They launch those and then they're in formation coming off of the rocket and then they deploy to their locations. But when you first see them before their deployment to their various locations, it's just a line of satellites that have just come off the rocket.
And it looks like
that ain't Santa Claus.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not Santa Claus.
You can see why my trainer thought I saw a UFO for sure. I mean, you know, what is this?
It looks like an unwound DNA helix when you see it in the sky. If you're watching the video, Leo's got it up. It's clearly not natural.
No. You might grab your kids, your dog, and your spouse and go underground because the aliens have arrived. This is a video, 4K video from Viral Video Lab on YouTube. I found it just by searching for a Starlink deployment. But that's pretty striking. So you saw that? You saw that?
People freaked out. People thought it was UFOs. And it was crazy.
Yeah, exactly. The next day after I saw it, the news story that I saw, because we were in sort of the Western United States, and apparently hundreds of people in the Salt Lake City area called 911 saying, what the hell is going on?
But again, this is an amazing thing that SpaceX is doing. I mean, it's mind boggling. Mm. And I was all excited for a long time about Starlink because it's in theory going to bring high speed internet access to every corner of the world. And then you find out, oh, yeah, but first you have to spend $600 on a satellite dish, and then it's going to be $110 a month. This is not some egalitarian effort to provide internet for everybody. This is a rich man's internet.
Oh, yes, coupled with remote, right? Like, I don't think just anybody can get this internet. I think you have to be...
Well, just anybody can get it, but you wouldn't unless you were way out there.
You had to. You would only buy because you had to. It's like Iridium. Right. You know, we talk, our host from This Week in Space, Rod Pyle, is up in the Arctic, about 15 degrees south of the North Pole, because NASA goes up there because it's the closest thing on Earth to Mars. So they test their rovers. He's up there with them. And he called a radio show today via Iridium satellite phone. It's a perfect example. You might say, oh, wow, Iridian, they're going to, it's 60 satellites. It's going to give phone access to every corner of the globe. Yeah. If you've got, you know, a, what was it? I think he said it was like $100 a megabyte or something. I mean, if you have a huge amount of money, this is great. Starlink is not designed. Maybe down the road, the plan is, oh, and, you know, we'll subsidize low-cost internet access for the third world.
But to their credit, they've done some good work in Ukraine.
Absolutely. FYI. And yeah. and firefighters in the U.S. and earthquake survivors, I think it was in Haiti. So, yes.
So the place I was staying when I saw Starlink was actually a customer, and I think they're in their beta program. So I think they probably get a break on the price.
For some reason, I got $100. I got my Starlink deposit back. I didn't ask for it back. But they gave it back to me. I think that was maybe Elon's message that you're never getting Starlink, buddy.
Yeah, probably so.
You dream on, buddy.
So now Elon and Tim get together and talk about not inviting Leo to stuff.
I can't go to Apple events. I can't get Elon's Starlink. I wanted it. I thought because imagine if you had a little box you could carry around with you wherever you were and you could do these shows from anywhere you were. And that was, to me, that was, again, the promise of that. And I'd be willing to pay $110 a month for that.
I got one of those boxes right here.
You have a Starlink?
No, I have a YOLO box. I just slap in my Mint Mobile chip when I need it.
Oh, there you go. Maybe that's what I should do.
The place I was staying actually had Starlink as their internet provider.
How was
it? In fact, my son and I ran in to the proprietors panicked at night going, we're being invaded. And they said, no, that's our internet provider.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah. And it was good. I was able to FaceTime my mom from the middle of nowhere and it was great quality. So, I mean, they had a dish, not a box. They had a dish that looked like a DirecTV dish.
It's a little box.
The box would hold the dish. Yeah, it's a dish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They do, they have a beach house somewhere in Mass, I think Salisbury-ish, and they use the Starlink to do the live stream to the eCam community once a month to tell them, like, what they're working on. And it works amazingly. I was originally worried that it would crap out in the middle of the show, but it seems to work. And I have another customer that's in England in, like, a giant sheep farm, and he uses it, and it's pretty flawless.
I guess this would be the point of the show where we do mention that Starlink ground stations have been successfully hacked with a $25 box that you could buy.
What does that mean?
Belgium.
It means anybody can get Starlink if they do the hack.
I don't. Let me read it. This, you know, we're going to see a lot of these stories. In fact, I have a ton of them today from Black Hat and DEF CON. This is the time of year where all of a sudden you find out everything you know has been hacked. Belgian security researcher Leonard Wouters, who is very well known, has gotten his own code running on the Dishy McDishface satellite terminals, and you can too. The hack is Dishy McDishface. That's what they call him. It's a mod chip with an RP2040 and a MOSFET that crowbars the power rails. So, you know, anybody could do this, browning out the main CPU exactly when it's verifying the firmware's validity, bypassing that protection. Oh, that's clever, entirely. Leonard had previously figured out how to dump the Starlink firmware direct from the EMMC and then upload it back. So now the circle of ownership is closed. There was a talk at DEF CON, of course, about $25 in parts. Leonard has submitted his attack to Starlink. And he says they took some precautions to make the glitching harder, but it's not like they can't really disable it. It's almost impossible to shield a device against an attacker who has it on the bench. You can't just go around and drive around town and hack people's Starlink. You know, you gotta get access to it. Elon's in a little bit more trouble with the California Department of Motor Vehicles. They are accusing Tesla of deceptive practices in marketing autopilot and full self-driving. The penalties could be as bad as losing the ability to sell Teslas in California. Tesla has not yet, as far as I know, responded to these allegations. I think they were supposed to by Friday, but I haven't seen the story that they have. So, I don't know what the upshot of this is. Maybe they're going to ask Tesla to put an asterisk next to autopilot and full self-driving. Maybe they'll ask him to change the name. And I think I agree with them that saying it's full self-driving or calling it autopilot is risky. It gives some people the feeling that they can get in the back seat and take a nap, which they cannot. Nothing to say here. Move along.
No, I'm just thinking like the self-driving thing just scares me. I've always thought it'd be cool. One of the things we were talking about, you know, studying abroad, when I lived in Japan, I lived in Tokyo City proper, but I went to school just outside in the country. So I had like an hour and a half every day train ride. And the one dope part about high-speed rail is I spent all that time doing work. Like I would actually do my homework instead because I would be partying.
Isn't that awesome? Before.
And it's awesome. So,
yeah, you're on a train. Like, you don't have to drive.
Yes. I love that. Even in Cali, when I was at Apple, I rode Caltrain many a times. Yes, you can actually just do stuff.
Love it.
And then so I wish we would get to that point, but the self-driving thing was supposed to be like a stopgap. But, it's just too scary. The only thing I wanted to do in self-driving is invent something so that I can codename my project Jesus Take the Wheel.
You mentioned how much you love Severance. Did you go to Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con?
I saw that panel. Apple TV,
they built a set. One of the things Apple's done really well, this is from Justin.cosplay on YouTube, is build physical sets that people can participate in. There you are in the boardroom at Severance. I'm sure there's a speaker that says, wake up. And I think you can actually wander around. There's the psychotherapy unit.
Oh, that is so cool.
Wouldn't you love to wander around in this?
Dude, your next idea for a wall is send us pictures of your mouths and let's build a Twit mouth wall.
Oh, love it.
I want to buy one of those computers. Somebody on Etsy, you figure that bad boy out, I would buy one of those.
So the story is the producers, they wanted to make it realistic. These are real computers. They used old computer parts to assemble something that looks kind of like a Lisa. I mean, it definitely looks vintage, but it actually is a real computer. It can actually do the thing they do on the show. Oh, Lord. Welcome to your pod.
Man, you're not built enough to be Milicic. Hey, is the baby Luco on the desk in homage to, you know, the Pixar game?
You're going to have to explain. Oh, the Luxo lamp here? You think that is a Pixar Luxo lamp? Maybe. Maybe. That's a good question. Anyway, I wish I had gone to Comic-Con because this would have been fun.
Dude, I love the fact that, you know, Dylan has his caricatures pinned to his desk.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty funny. Great. Yeah.
So great.
You obviously are a Severance stan, not just a fan.
You know what it is for me? Any person, and this is Ben Stiller, the mind of Ben Stiller is so brilliant. And I love it when there's these guys that we grew up with that everybody just thought they were just these random comedians and kind of goofy. And you look at the creativity that's in the Jim Carrey or the Ben Stiller that goes far deeper than just them being a slapstick comedy person. The small stuff that they put in that connects it all together is so brilliant.
Stiller did say something interesting at that Comic-Con panel. He said, we don't get viewer information from Apple. And I thought this could be problematic for Apple. You know, people who produce shows often want to know how many people watched. Did one person, 100,000? But Apple
people don't get
it
from Netflix either.
No streamer does. Except I don't buy that. Apple knows, right? Netflix knows. They've got to be saying, look, you can't admit that you know this, but I'm just going to remember. Right?
It's a different Hollywood where because everything's internal, like why give up that leverage, right? So the only
way
that
producer
you know
reasonably needs Ben Stiller 100%. Reasonably wants to know
because
how many
he
people
wants
watched
to know.
Me on that.
If you're not only that, but think of Leo. Like if you as a producer knew, well, this was our most popular episode. This is what people really connected to this character. Like if you're in a black box, it's harder to respond to how the audience has responded to you.
Right. But here's the different side of it, though. Let me be Doc Advocate for a second. If you look at YouTube, I guess I'm the content creator, right? If you look at what the content creators are telling you, we're telling you.
Oh,
you don't have to get the exact numbers from it. Just watch us. We tell you. And I think 14 Emmys kind of gives you a good idea how you're doing, player.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, Look, so if you're a content creator, if you're a Ben Stiller or a Martin Scorsese, you have a lot of choices now. People throwing money at you saying, please produce something for our streaming channel. And then it's not just money, I'm sure. It's also, oh, we can give you prestige, or we'll push you for nominations for Oscars or Emmys, or, you know. But I think a missing point of it that the networks, the television networks can offer is, we'll tell you how many people saw this episode.
So here's a problem that I fight with, and I think you will understand this because you do this as a business. My thing is trying to teach my creators, do not get sucked into staring at the analytics and start making knee-jerk reactions based off the analytics. Your only true algorithm is your actual audience. So pay attention to your audience. Listen to what they're telling you. When YouTube starts to show you these weird blips in your ad revenue because, you know, companies stop spending during July because they know everybody's on vacation, don't freak out and think that means that your content isn't being hit. And so the problem with algorithms is you make false adjustments and in turn do stupid things that alienate your audience. But if you listen to your audience, they will always guide you in the direction that they want you to go. So I try to tell people stop staring at the algorithms. And so, yeah, somebody mentioned that awards don't equal viewers, but paying attention to what the viewers are actually telling you, listen to the podcast, setting up Q&As that can be live streamed on Twitch or YouTube or whatever with your audience, doing a show like this where you have your whole audience in the chat telling you what to do. That's way more valuable than numbers.
But that's
way more valuable
than
numbers.
That's how YouTube and podcasts are different than broadcast television.
Correct.
Right. Broadcasters have no idea. They don't have a two-way. I remember some years ago before he passed, it was actually he had just announced he was retiring. I taught Regis Philbin how to Twitter. There's actually a YouTube video of it. And so he tweeted, I just announced my retirement today on the show. And he started getting all these responses back. And he was so excited because here's a guy who had been 50 years in broadcasting. He never got that kind of feedback. He called his wife. He said, Joy, go look on Twitter. They're talking to me. By the way, he quit Twitter within a week because he couldn't handle it. These guys are not used to that feedback. But I got to tell you, if you're a television producer, you want to know, well, how many people watch show one? How many people watch show 10? Did it go up? Did it go down? That's valuable information. And Apple, I cannot believe that Apple is not telling Ben Stiller how Severance is doing. He says they give us charts with no bait, you know, no zero. You know, it's up, it's down. They don't give us the numbers. That's very Apple-y. I think that's, if in the long run, that's not going to work for Apple. The producers want to know how many people saw this show. I really do. But I might be wrong. Maybe not. All right, we're going to take a quick break. I've kept you so long. We got a couple more things to do. I do want to talk about some of the silliest things that happened this week. But first, a word from a great sponsor, ClickUp. Imagine if you could get an extra day every week. You know, instead of 5-day work week, 4 days. What would that be worth to you? What would you do with would you binge Severance? I mean, I know that's what Doc would do. Cook healthy meals, work out more, write a novel. You could take advantage of that extra day a week. Well, that's what ClickUp gives you, the productivity platform that is so effective it will save you one day of work a week. And that's guaranteed. I know you don't believe me, but it's guaranteed. ClickUp was started because they realized productivity was broken. There were too many tools to keep track of, too many things. All the ecosystems were siloed, separate, didn't talk to one another. They knew there had to be a better way to get through the daily hustle, so they created ClickUp, the one tool. I love it when a startup scratches their own itch. They solved their own problem, and that's why it works so well. It's the one tool that houses all your tasks, your projects, your docs, your goals, your spreadsheets, your more. Built for teams from a single person, ClickUp will help you, to 1,000-plus people. It's packed with features and customization options that no other productivity tool has, so you can tailor it to work exactly how you do. Whether you're in project management or engineering or sales or marketing or HR, ClickUp has easy-to-use solutions that create a more efficient work environment. I think that's a nice kind of balancing act. Yes, it's highly customizable, but from day one, you'll get started with a setup that is tuned for the kind of work you do, and then you can refine it if you want. This explains a lot. 800,000 highly productive teams are using ClickUp. 800,000. That's huge success. I'm going to get you 15% off ClickUp's massive unlimited plan, and not just for the first month, but for the whole first year. That means you're going to start reclaiming time for less than $5 a month. Sign up today, clickup.com. Please use the offer code TWIT so they know you saw it here. But hurry, this offer ends soon. If you want to know more, read some of the testimonials on the ClickUp website, clickup.com. Imagine getting an extra day every week. That's what productivity can do for you. ClickUp.com. Again, 15% off, but you got to use the offer code TWIT. Thank you, ClickUp, for supporting our show. I'm excited about this. I may be the only one. You were talking about how the kids today like the old music. I like the old games. Did you ever hear of, you're probably not old enough, did you, any of you? Oh, wait.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Dude, I lived it. First thing I ever bought was my first computer.
Yes. You know what I'm talking about.
100%. I was waiting for this. And we were talking about this on a live stream like a month ago. And the fact that this is coming real now, when I saw the story, blew my mind. I'm like, backflips.
Ditto.
I can't believe you're talking about the same story I am.
100%. King's Quest.
Ken and Roberta are back.
You are. Okay. Yes. You are. But it's not King's Quest. So Ken and Roberta Williams,
right, the original one.
They sold Sierra Online. But they brought you King's Quest and Space Quest, A Quest for Glory. They were the original graphic adventures, remember? But in the old days, before graphic adventures, there were text adventures. You might remember, if you're old, Zork and, you know, Zork. Planet Fall and those Infocom adventures. But even before that, I used to play it on a dial-up modem. Dialing into CompuServe, there was a game by Will Crowther and Don Woods called Colossal Cave Adventure. And this was the first text adventure, an amazing adventure game. I loved it. So Ken and Roberta have got together, and they've made a graphic version of Colossal Cave. Get your plug and your XYZZY ready. This is very exciting. This was a great game. It's more than 50 years old. You can still play if you search for Colossal Cave online. There's you know, simulators online.
And you can apparently do it in VR. They're porting it to the Quest.
Oh, I may actually have to get a Quest just to do this. This comes from the Geek's Guide to the Galaxy podcast. So I should give them credit because they got Ken and Roberta on, and then they got them to tell us about this. Here it comes. Now, did they say when they're... I can't believe you guys remember Colossal Cave. I'm stunned.
But it's also...
I remember King's Quest.
King's Quest, for sure.
King's Quest.
Yeah. But Leo, this is also like, I don't know, a famous movie director, an auteur coming back after not making a movie for 25 years. That's
right.
Also the big story.
That's
here,
also
too.
The story. Yes. Ken and Roberta coming back, yeah. So Colossal Cave was released in 1976. Ken and Roberta assembled a team of almost 30 artists and programmers to do a graphical version of this classic text adventure. Roberta on the podcast said none of them really knew what Colossal Cave was. Yeah, 1976. They weren't even born. We've had to educate them. All I have to say, she said, is that as we've worked with them on this game in various ways, programmers, animators, artists, they've come to have such respect for this game. And I've been told many times I had no idea this game was this good and this interesting and this deep and complex. I am the same age as Ken and Roberta. I am so thrilled that they are bringing this back. That is exciting. Episode 523 of Geek's Guide to the Galaxy, if you want to hear the full interview. It's Wired Magazine's gaming podcast. I think this is such good news. Oh, I'm so glad. I'm kind of thrilled that you guys are excited about this.
Oh, man, this is so good. See, I'm actually.
Did you play King's Quest? Is that why?
Well, no, actually, I think my first one was Mystery House or
Mystery House.
Science Theater or whatever the heck it was called.
Yeah.
And then King's Quest. And, of course, the other one that I was just telling my group this, we were talking about this, is I would love for Al Lowe to bring back
Leisure Suit Larry.
Leisure Suit Larry.
Oh, my God. But let's make it Leisure Suit Leo.
Yeah. Oh, please. Oh my God, it would ruin my reputation, which is already ruined.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good.
Listen, I interviewed Al Lowe many years ago.
I was too young to play it, so I felt like I was doing something wrong.
What a character, Al Lowe. It was
so, wait.
Yeah.
So the Leisure Suit Larry games were the first games that as kids we got pirated versions of because
they were sexy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then number two, the hundreds and hundreds of dollars that then my parents discovered when I called in for the King's Quest and Space Quest tip lines, the 1-900 numbers, so that we could beat the game. And then a month later, my dad sits me down and says, why is there a $400 charge on my phone bill?
Oh, Lord. Ooh. Ow. Yeah.
$400 in 88 was a lot of money.
I bet you.
And it was 88. You're right.
That changes, but people don't. Now it's just all the kids who are making unauthorized in-app purchases in their
There was
games.
No Reddit to explain or YouTube to give us walkthroughs, yeah.
All right, get ready, kids, because Internet Archive has Leisure Suit Larry on their emulator. You can play it from 1987.
Let's see if I'm right. This starts. It starts in a hot tub, right?
This was the filthiest game in such a stupid way. I don't know. Oh, here we go. Programming by Al Lowe. I don't know if the keyboards. I don't know what. It's so annoying.
The credits so are good. Great.
I need that ringtone. Just to find the old people around me.
This was
because
this was
I know that
a Sierra Online game. Oh my God! By the way, $400 in 1988 would be $1,001.78 today.
I had a lot of things taken away from me.
Lord. Thank you to Jason Howell, our producer, for that. Jason looked it up. Cameo coding by Ken Williams. There you go. Okay, let's see the game. Will there be a hot tub? Oh, come on. I mean, is this going to just play the attract thing forever? It is. It's playing. Come on. How do I get the game going? There's apparently something I don't know. I don't know how to do. Maybe some button. Oh, warning. Oh,
there you are.
Warning. Yeah, I hit the right button. Leisure Suit Larry and the Land of the Lounge Lizards contains some elements of plot which may not be considered appropriate for some children.
For some children.
How old am I? 65.
They were appropriate for 10-year-olds, apparently.
Wait a minute.
To
verify
you
that you're really 65, please answer 5 simple questions.
I remember these questions.
Who's buried in Grant's tomb? Grant Tinker, Land Grant, NSF Grant, Mrs. Grant. These are nonsense, but I'm going to answer them anyway. Correct. If a physician were stranded on a desert island with Bo Derek, does anybody remember Bo Derek? He would probably build a boat, take 2 aspirins, overcharge her, thank God.
D.
D.
Correct.
The first lady to culturally appropriate braids.
Which is not an American armed force. The Army, the Navy, the National Guard, or the National League. D seems to be the answer everywhere here. Mm-hmm. Lee Harvey Oswald killed Harvey Milk, Charles Nelson Reilly, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, or William Randolph Hearst. Okay, there's nothing to laugh about there, but so far so good. Now for the final question. Bourbon Street is in Whiskeyville, Indiana, Jackass Flats, Idaho, Monopoly, or New Orleans. I think I know the answer to that.
I want credit for as a 10-year-old passing these, okay?
You got through these. So the idea was if you were a kid, you wouldn't be able to get through those.
With no ability to look it up on Google yet either.
I guess you're right. Yeah. Oh, no, it does not begin in a hot tub.
Not a hot tub. Okay.
It begins in Lefties. I don't know how to. Oh, there we go. Here we go. I'm going into Lefties Bar and Grill. Enter. How can you do that? Open door? I don't know. Open door. Okay. So this is actually a text adventure with really crappy graphics, by the way. sit at bar. There's no time. There's no time. Sit down?
Just say sit down, yeah.
You're not close enough.
Walk to bar.
To bar. Just walk there. Okay, walk. You've played this game.
I know. I'm telling you.
Just walk. Just walk.
Use the arrows. Use the arrow keys.
Oh. Dude, things like the poster on the wall, when you're a kid, like, and when I'm doing this, I think I'm like 17.
That's a sexy poster.
But even still, I was like, yeah. Yo, what is this? You know? Unheard
also,
of.
Isn't this a specific form of graphics that, like, Prodigy had the same sort
yeah,
of?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What do they call that? I've forgotten. Something. Oh, gosh, I can't remember it. But, yeah. That was so it's you could stream this. I mean, this is so low res. Anyway, enough of Leisure Suit Larry.
Leo, I'm willing to play this with you after the show ends.
I think we could do a play along. This would be huge, right? Put this on Twitch. I forgot to, but I should right now do a little promo for some of the things you missed this week on Twitch. Now you and I can play Leisure Suit Larry. Go ahead. Watch. Yeah. So Meta did it again. Remember their chatbot, Tay, which quickly became racist.
No, that was Microsoft.
That was Microsoft.
That was Microsoft. That was Microsoft.
Andrew, can you pick up some coffee, please, to her?
Previously on Twit, all about Android.
Google released kind of a marketing campaign this morning called Get the Message.
You know, SMS is a 30-year-old technology. It deserves to be replaced by something more modern and something better. And we honestly just want to ask people to help get this through to Apple, to fix this problem.
Welcome back to Hands on Windows. In this episode, we're going to look at some of the basic multitasking features in Windows 11.
Tech News Weekly.
Honestly, this is probably the most important announcement from yesterday, the Z Flip 4, which, I mean, as of last year, really became...
So
you're peeling it off. You're peeling off the cellophane. Oh, it's so satisfying. Oh, there we go.
So twit.
There's some people out there in ASMR land who are just going crazy right now.
We had a good week, and I hope you will come back and watch more shows this week. And a reminder to Club Twit members, you have exclusive access to that hands-on Windows show, brand new from Paul Thurrott. You also have exclusive access to Club Twit members, have exclusive access to the hands-on Macintosh show that Micah Sargent's doing, our Ultimate Linux show. What we've been doing is we launch shows in the club, because club members are paying for it, before we can get advertisers. So this way you help us launch new shows, and then shows like This Week in Space, which launched in the club, then gets launched quite literally into the public space once we build up the audience. So this is one of the most important things that Club Twit does. At $7 a month, you get ad-free versions of all the shows, access to the fabulous Discord, where there's always great content going on and conversations. That's really a social network. And then the Twit Plus feed. But that $7 a month really helps us also generate new content. We have lots of plans for the future. Thanks to our club members. If you're not a member yet, twit.tv/clubtwit. And I should mention that what we are doing with Hands on Mac and Hands on Windows is shows that are of broader general interest. We're putting those out on YouTube, on our Twit channel on YouTube. So you can at least get a taste of what the show is like. And so I think there is a Hands on Windows coming out that is Windows shortcuts. Micah did one looking at the brand new Mac OS. So those are available on our YouTube feed as well, just to give you a taste. And thanks to all our club members. Did you see this Netflix? Speaking of games, Netflix launched games. You remember that? According to stats, fewer than 1% of Netflix subscribers are playing. Have anybody played any of the Netflix games?
I'm a little confused by that, because the daily active user number was 1.7.
Well, that's pretty good.
Million.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, right.
That's less than 1% of 1%. The 221 million customers.
I understand, but so this, when I framed this story on my show, I said, can someone tell me, is this good or terrible, terrible, terrible? It sounds terrible if it's less than 1%. But if the whole point is that they want to do new things to keep you inside the app, to give value so you don't feel bad about paying the subscription, if 1.7 million people are playing games on Netflix, that's
every day.
Terrible.
No, that's a good point.
You've given 1.7 million people another reason to keep paying the subscription.
Tell me a Netflix show that has more than 1.7 million viewers. That's actually a very good point.
And listen, I could be wrong because I agree that less than 1% of their user base sounds terrible. But for what they're trying to achieve with going into gaming, it didn't sound terrible to me.
They did spend hundreds of millions of dollars acquiring these gaming companies. But I think, you know what? You make an excellent point. So forget that headline. 1.7 million daily active users of anything is pretty darn good.
So
but
these
it also
are
takes
all
time for it to mature, yeah. right? Like yeah. people need to figure out because just people still think that Discord is just for gamers, and as you and I and other people are starting to build really thriving, amazing communities, I'm still getting. But isn't Discord just for gamers? I don't want to do that.
Right.
It's like, no, man. So labeling,
Denise, what were you going to say?
Not only labeling, but like what. Tech, what platform are these all mobile games that you do on the phone? I'm not going to sit on my couch and play a game on Netflix on the TV, am I?
It's all of the above. And one of the weird things is that they're limiting it, at least right now, to tie-ins to their existing shows.
So it's like Stranger Things, the game.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which maybe is good because then it grows affinity or whatever. But like, so they're not trying to build their own Fortnite yet, right?
Right.
But again, like if the issue is they lost subscribers for the first time ever last quarter, and they just have to they're trying to throw anything against the wall to see what sticks in terms of adding more value to keep people subscribing because of all the new competition. I don't know. Like even if it was just Snake or Solitaire, but 1.7 million people a day were in the Netflix app to play Snake or Solitaire, that doesn't hurt them.
It's a good point.
Yeah, it's a lot of it has to do with education. Okay, so when I first went to Japan, we were just getting into like the handheld console games, like the PSP right. and the Game Boy,
DSD,
the second version of the Game Boy, the DS when you opened it, and they were very small market here in the U.S. at that particular time. When I went to Japan and I'm in a train riding culture and then going to Korea right after in another train riding culture, everybody's in there with some small micro thing in their hand doing that. So even the idea of watching TV shows and movies or whatever in your hand seems weird. When I was in Japan, manga in your phone as comic books, like just going down, everybody, like 8 to 80, blind, crippled, crazy, everyone's reading this stuff on their phone. We see so many things from our own lens. And we're not anywhere near the biggest market as we saw in the WhatsApp thing a minute ago.
Yeah.
Like in places like China and in certain areas in Korea and Japan, the computer is basically the one that fits in your pocket. You know, people are not, they don't have the time, the space, or the wherewithal to even own a full computer. So we have to start to do that a little bit more, like understand there is a global lens to these things. So I can see Netflix gaming growing. But if we're looking at it from the lens of where we sit today, I mean, you just don't understand it. You're thinking about it from your perspective.
Right. Especially if they can tie it into anime series that they have, you know, that would play right into that audience.
100%.
How many of you still pay for Netflix? Do you still subscribe, Denise?
Yep.
Yep. And you do. Everybody does. And I do. And yet I feel like Netflix, there's not a lot of content I want to watch on Netflix.
It's the least used of the services that I pay for.
How long can that go on before people go, yeah, I guess this is the one I'm going to drop, especially since it's the most expensive
one. Listen, how many people are still paying for AOL email addresses and dial-up? Like,
everybody who listens to my radio show is paying for AOL.
There's a certain inertia to subscribing to things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then unsubscribing too. Here's another one that.
But I feel like in the long run, it's going to hurt that what's been missing. They were hoping with this. What is it? The Gray Man, this new movie.
Yeah.
They were hoping that was going to be it. It did. It wasn't. It didn't. I think Stranger Things season 3, for all the hype and publicity, didn't really capture people's attention.
Doc, I want you to go after me, but let me. Let me step on this real quick, because the long-term play for everything, the solution for Netflix's problem is their own IP library, right?
Mm-hmm. They got to have a winning show. They got to have a
show. If they owned Star Wars, it wouldn't be a problem because they'd have a great Star Wars game to go along with the Star Wars shows that are coming out or whatever. So this the long-term thing is they are, someone, again, smarter than me, said this week, they're becoming a media company. which they always were, but they got a certain halo by pretending to be a tech company all this time. And Doc, I'm sorry to step on you, but that.
But no, the economics of media is what's happening. Yeah.
I would back you up and say they have been secretly talking about generating a podcasting network in order to try to pull some of my crew over to their side as a way of taking bigger shows that exist on YouTube.
Because if you've got a great show that everyone loves, there's this whole ecosystem of everyone geeking out about it and talking about it. So why not have a piece of that action? Right, exactly.
Yes, right. So they're trying to do that as well. You know, and what's going to happen is, I think they'll eventually get there, but they're in the same position as TV and radio was when we first got to sort of the end of the Tower Records era. Give the people what they want. And if you're paying attention, stop dumping all your money on these big shows that tank when they could have went and bought literally 300 really good top level YouTube shows with million followings. Mm. And they would have been bigger for them than to do that, right? Like, I'm not going to say that Leo wants to sell, but if Netflix came in and said, hey, let's put the Twit universe on Netflix.
No, they wouldn't buy me. If they do podcasts, what they're going to do is fan casts for the shows they already have. Yes. They'll do a Squid Game fan cast.
Genius.
Because that's what builds audience. That's the smart thing to do.
That's what Spotify did. Spotify did that with Ringer. They bought the Ringer not for the sports content, but for all of the pop culture content. Yep. Yeah,
I agree 100%.
Correct. And I wanted to ask this question before we left. Does anybody else get irritated when you're watching a movie or a TV show or something like, you know, Stranger Things, and you see a shark jumping moment that says, oh, they're going to make a video game out of this part?
No. Have you seen that? Is that the case?
Oh, yes, all the time, especially in sci-fi movies or things where they think that might generate. I'm like, they're writing a plot of a video game the same time they're making this movie.
That's the because I always will read a novel and go, oh, yeah, this guy wants to sell an option for a movie. He's writing a movie. But I haven't seen that yet, seeing a TV show saying, oh, yeah, they're writing a video game.
The next
game,
time I see one, I'm going to at you.
Is there going to be an Expanse video game? That's all I want to know.
See, good one. That's another good
Wouldn't
one.
Wouldn't that be a good one? Yeah.
Yes. And then they could put it on the Amazon version of their gaming platform for Prime Games. And
you get
a little controller.
Isn't that what Lucas did right, though, was instead of creating a series of movies, he created a world. His real skill was world building. And the success of the Star Wars Empire is not the 9 movies. It is movies, TV shows, video games, action figures. It is all of that. Except amusement parks.
The disappointing thing about, as someone, we all grew up with this stuff. As a kid, there were the 3 movies and that was it. And then all I wanted was like, well, what about this world? What if we expanded? What if we went over here away from the Skywalkers? And like, what is it like to be a worker on the Death Star or whatever? And all we've gotten from these idiots since they bought Star Wars is Skywalker. Yeah. Oh, let's do a new show where we also have to protect a kid. It turns out it's Baby Leia because we had baby. Yeah. He created a universe, and the promise we thought was, okay, let's go explore the dark corners of this universe or the corner over here. But they just recycle the same
crap. Do you think that's because George sold it? If George had kept it, he would have done that?
I think part of it is Disney.
Yeah.
I think part of it is Disney.
It's Disney.
And Brian is on point 115%. At the time, George got the storyteller moniker. People, as a Japanese history major, George stole that. Go research the Ashikaga Shogunate. It is the Ashikaga Shogunate.
You can say that for a lot of things. This is an archetype. You could say that. I don't think George pretends that there was anything particularly original about it. He even talks about the hero with 1,000 faces and other. You know, it's a classic hero story.
Correct.
But he put it together in the right way, and he did it. And I think he was smart about world building. And I think he would have done, you know, what's it like to be the janitor on the Death Star? I think he would have done that. I think that would have happened.
So what we're seeing now is we're seeing Disney and the people trying to, and Lucasfilm's trying to create a MCU. after the MCU started. So what's going to happen, everything will get, no matter what anyone does, even if it's good, will get parallel to trying to be the MCU. And I find it hilarious because DC cannot string together a DC version of the MCU to save their soul. And they've been trying for 10 years now.
I have to do this story. Because I have gotten at least 100 emails from people saying, did you see this? Jared Mock lived in rural Michigan. He wanted internet access. He asked Comcast. They said, that'll be $50,000 to trench out to your house. So instead, he went out, got wholesale fiber, created an ISP for 30 homes. That's by itself a success story, Washtenaw Fiber Properties. He's got.
By the way, I lived in Washtenaw County for 5 years.
Oh, you know it.
That's where Ann Arbor is. So now, granted, there are rural areas even outside of Ann Arbor, but it's not like this is like, you know, the Upper Peninsula or something.
It's not. It's not woods. But
yes,
yeah, he has 70 customers. But now here's the best story: the American Rescue Plan's coronavirus state and local fiscal recovery funds, a $71 million fund to Washtenaw County. Some of that's going to be dedicated to Mock. He's going to actually get a couple of mil to add more properties. The government says you need to add 417 addresses in Freedom, Lima, Lodi, and how do you pronounce that? Scio.
Hey, listen. There's a Milan, Michigan that is spelled Milan.
Oh, I know.
Michiganders love to.
They like to crazy. Mackinac. Yeah. So, what is Lima pronounced Lima or Lima?
Lima.
Lima. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lodi in California, we say Lodi. Did they say Lodi?
Lodi.
Lodi. Lodi, right. Okay. So the contract from the feds says you have to add 714 locations. He said, this is so much money, I can add another 600 fiber customers to my plan. I think this is such a great story of local internet.
I did that one too, and I love it because, again, it's just sort of like it's sort of like a DIY project that took off in a way that he didn't. Because he says in the story something like, well, they did a request for proposal, and I sent in one that took the whole thing, and that was probably stupid, but they gave me the whole thing.
He got it. $2.6 million in the federal funds to build out his ISP. So that's a happy story. I like to end with
that. That is a great story. It's funny, too. When the original sort of thing I saw in this is probably like 2 or 3 years old when he was first starting out. And all of the comments were very hate commenty about, well, he had to be rich because he needed to have the money to dig the trenches and all of that. I like, people, you guys are missing the point. I mean, first of all, the guy's, you know, lives up there and he has a boat and, you know, he obviously wasn't like coming from the complete pauper situation, but still.
Can I give the context, Doc? What it was is Comcast said, we will string the wire to your house. It'll cost you $10,000 or no. He said that if they had said $10,000, I would have paid it. But they quoted him $50,000, and that's why he started his ISP. So, right, not everyone has $10,000 to string cable to their house. But
yeah, it was just funny. Just watch the hate comments. But I'm like, what he did was brilliant. Like, let it go, people. Like, you live in a different place, and you don't come against it. I got it. But it was just funny. And this is common for, you know, my side of the world, which is YouTube. There's a lot of yap talking in there that people don't know what they're talking about, but it is kind of funny that was what they went for, not that he actually went up against the multi-trillion-dollar industry. That was the better thought. So it was a great story, though.
My assignment for tonight: to watch Kurosawa's Hidden Fortress from 1958 and see how close it is to Star Wars.
100% Kurosawa. That is exactly true.
He's stolen.
That is smart.
What is the Mandalorian but Seven Samurai? Well, there's not every episode about that, but yeah.
Kurosawa.
The Mandalorian is very smart.
It's pretty amazing, I have to say, and so is Mifune. All right, so I had never heard of this, but I'll be watching it now. I have to figure out where I can see it. Good luck. Oh, HBO Max has it. All right. The Hidden Fortress. Denise Howell, you rock. I thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It was wonderful, as always.
And you gave us the best news of all that you're going to bring back the podcast or do a podcast. And I just wish you could tell us when and where, but is it soon?
It should be within the next couple months. Yes.
Awesome. And you will come back and tell us all about it, right?
I will. I promise.
Let us plug it like crazy. Of course, you can also follow her at denisehowell.info or on the Twitter at dhowell. I bet you could find out there as well. The minute that I know there are quite a few Twit listeners who would love to see what you're up to. Will it be a little bit like Twill or something different? Or
it's going to be a one-on-one interview and not a panel show.
Awesome.
And then I'm co-hosting another show on our forthcoming network. I will tease it by saying that my partner, network co-founder, is someone who's been on This Week in Law.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Not a regular person on This Week in Law, but has been on.
There's, you know,
Barack Obama.
Yeah, of course.
There you go.
There you go. That is Brian McCullough, host of the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast, a daily dose of tech news, kind of a must listen in the tech world. And now, apparently, venture capitalist. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and it's a tiny rolling fund that anyone can participate in. You don't have to be Harvard endowment to participate in. But the Ride Home Fund is only there because of the Tech Meme Ride Home. 15 minutes every day, wherever podcasts are purveyed. And we do the weekday 15-minute rundown. On the weekends, we do the bonus episodes that Leo was talking about. We had Chris Dixon on recently of Andreessen Horowitz talking Web3. We had Matthew Ball talking the metaverse. This weekend, we had Noah Smith of Bloomberg, the Economist columnist, where all I did was ask him, are we in a recession or not?
Oh, that's a good question. And then he didn't. And then he talked the rest of the show.
And no, he didn't give me an answer for the entire 45 minutes he was on. Yeah.
Yeah, because no one knows.
Yeah, right.
I'll tell you, I have made an unofficial rule that I will not have anybody on to talk NFTs or Web3 on this show. So you can have all of them.
All right.
They're all yours. If you want to learn about NFTs and Web3.
What about the metaverse? The metaverse, then.
I'm on the fence on that one. I'm on the fence.
Okay.
That could go either way. I'm on the fence. That one's got more promise than Web3 or Bitcoin or NFTs or anything.
Hey, listen, I'm on the fence of all of these things.
Yeah, that's the right place to be, truthfully. Right. Yeah. It can be uncomfortable after a while, but it's the right place to be. Thank you, Brian. Always great to see you. You too, Doc Rock, in the purpleness of his grotto.
I am laughing at this from Google Wave to Millimeter Wave comment.
This is just freaking brilliant.
That is a good line.
Denise, did you put that in there?
I did. I'm putting all my potential show titles in the chat.
Oh, my goodness. That was so good.
I like Roomba Soccer, which you also came up with. I like that. Doc, tell us where I can find more Doc Rock.
I'm pretty much all over the interverse at Doc Rock. I'm also the community manager at Ecamm. So anytime you see some tutorial or show that we put together, I either record it, edit it, started it, or something of that nature. I spend a lot of time recording stuff for us. And I do want to take a time to give a shout out to Ken and Glenn, our founders, not just because they're my bosses, but they're really my friends. They're really great guys. And believe it or not, many Mac users use stuff that they invented that they might not know, like Printopia or Skype Call Recorder or some of the other.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Stuff they made long before they made Ecamm Live. I slid in the door late.
Will you give my love to Luria? Do you get to talk to her ever?
Yes, talk to her pretty much all the time. She is so hilarious. She's super funny. She's doing some big stuff now herself. I think she had a lot to do with convincing Renee to do what he's doing right now. Because the three of us talk, you know, back and forth a lot. And, yeah, I'm pretty sure that she convinced him to do it.
Good. Luria Petrucci, a.k.a. Callie Lewis.
Callie Lewis.
A longtime friend of the show. And, I'm so glad that she's been doing a lot of stuff for Ecamm, I see. And her own, company, which is teaching people how to stream.
Yep. Live streaming pros. She's doing really, really well. Thank you for having me. This is so much fun. Like, I absolutely enjoy coming to hang out with you. And
always a pleasure. And, you know, just as we say at the beginning, aloha, we can now say at the end, aloha to Doc Rock and to our good friends, Denise Howell and Brian McCullough. And to all of you, we do Twit every Sunday around about 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. Actually, theoretically, we could start at 2. It's usually more like 2:30. But I'll tell you what, you don't want to miss the pre-show. So tune in, audio or video, live.twit.tv. If you can't be here at 2100 UTC, you can always get it on demand at our website, twit.tv. You can get it on YouTube. There's a Twit channel, This Week in Tech, for just the This Week in Tech show channel. In fact, all our shows have their own channel. Or subscribe in your favorite podcast player. That would be probably the best way to get it. Thank you for being here. I think we have to say by now we must be the longest running tech podcast in existence. Now in our 18th
guaranteed
year. It's got to be, right?
Guaranteed.
Yeah. Thank you for being here all those years, and we'll see you next time. Meanwhile, another Twit.
He's amazing. Bye-bye.